And welcome to the other side of midnight, where anything can happen this time of night. It's the witching hour. I'm your host tonight because Richard seems to lost power. My name's Keith Morgan, and most of you have tuned in know that I'm the discoverer of the Morgan Curve on Mars. And I had to host a show that was going to feature Stephen Bassett last time, but I've got him this time. And so this is going to be a good show. And I wanted to introduce Stephen. I've known him most of the time I was working at ABC. He would send out a press release. And for you who don't know who he is, he's the UFO lobbyist on Capitol Hill, the one and only that I know of. And he's been doing this for quite a while. He's been pushing for disclosure and trying to get these people to cough up and tell the truth about what's going on with our place in this universe. And we have to grow up and also accept that place in the universe. And I attended his ex conferences back in the day. So I met Giorgio Tsoukalos, and he didn't remember me, of course, but he will remember me now after the 2018 Baltimore Alien Con and the 2019 Alien Con. So anyway, Stephen has been working tirelessly to push this whole ET UFO thing out into the light. And when you turn on the light, of course, all the cockroaches run into the corners and try to disappear. And they've been doing everything to try to cover this whole thing up again. And that's what happened July 26, 2023, when they had the conference in front of Congress. And the guy from the Navy stood up, and he actually bold-faced lied straight to Congress. But these guys didn't understand what they were looking at or what was going on. They had no technical consultant there to confirm or deny what this guy was saying to them. And all I could do was sit there and shake my head and go, their own video disputes what is coming out of his mouth. And I got to talk about that on the first show, but I didn't get to show it to Stephen, but I'll show it to him as we go along. So I'm going to bring Stephen on, and hopefully he will give you some insight into what's happening now with all of the crap that we've been going through and that they've been handing out to people. Stephen, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fine.
So we're going to talk about the UFO UAP disclosure and what's new with it, because I got stuff to show you. I don't know if you saw the July 26 conference and how they were finagling with the video that they were playing, and the guy didn't know how to put VLC into single frame mode so you could look at it frame by frame. But then he tells the congressman, because one congressman said, so what are we looking at? Are we looking at somebody looking out a commercial jet window? And I'm like, no, idiot, you're looking out a freaking fighter jet window cockpit. And that's the kind of unbalanced knowledge that these guys have, because they could look at something and not realize what they're looking at. But this guy tells them, well, as far as we know, this was debris floating out there and the jet shot past it. And I'm going, no, your video disputes that. The jet is not flying backwards. It's not flying ass backwards. It's going forward. And this thing was coming up on his left side, or port side, if you want to call it by Navy terms. And they knew it was coming, either from their radar, LIDAR, or whatever they had. And then they'd start to make a bank to the right, because they knew they were not going to catch this thing unless they start to make their angle. And then this thing shoots by. And if the idiot running VLC, which is one of the best open source video players out there, knew how to put it into frame by frame mode, It can go frame by frame forward, but you can't go frame by frame backwards. You would have seen this thing come into the frame, one third through, and then two thirds through, and then gone. And that's in like a 15th of a second that this thing passed through the frame. And these jets couldn't have been passing it because, one, it got slightly bigger. And if you're passing something, shouldn't it be getting smaller? So he was lying through his teeth. Either he was given that information and said, this is what you're going to present, and that's what he did, and he had no clue what he was even looking at. Bill's into my section in the pictures, radio with pictures section on the website. And I had him up last week, but I decided to put him back up this week. Plus, there is a video of that hearing. The whole 2 hours or 2.5 hours, whatever it was. And I took some stills from the playback that they were using, and I show the object. And it's actually there in three frames, because the first frame, it looks like a little black edge right on the edge of the left frame, just above the horizon. And then the next frame, it's out one third across. The next frame after that is two thirds across, and it's getting bigger. So that means they're not passing it. Plus, the clouds are coming towards the plane. Now, clouds can't pass planes. I don't care if it's a jet or a prop plane. Clouds can't pass a plane, okay? But in the video, if you look carefully, you'll see the wispy clouds rushing towards the plane. But nobody's paying attention to this. And the guy says, as far as we know, who is we? Is it the congressman or is it the Navy? And you know the Navy tore this thing apart pixel by pixel, looking at every little nook and cranny of it. But yet they can't tell where this thing is sitting and which way the jets are going. Come on. Now, I can understand the congressman. They've never been near a military jet. But when it comes down to the Navy itself, they're supposed to know this stuff. So who's telling the truth here? So Stephen Tuck, can you tell us what's in the works right now? What's happening?
Well, first of all, could you remind me what hearing are you referring to? Which one?
It was July 26th, and
what year?
Last year, actually.
You're talking about the Grush hearing?
No, not Grush. I have a link to it under my items in Radio with Pictures.
Okay.
Do you have your browser open?
I do.
Okay.
I need to go to the website. The Grush hearing was on July 26th, but that film stuff was not in it. It sounds like you're talking about
maybe
the Moultrie Bray hearing several years ago, but I'm not sure.
Okay, maybe I've got the year wrong. It was the one where the Navy guy was there representing the Navy. They were playing back videos that they were saying, oh, we don't know what these are. Maybe it was 22. I don't think it was then.
The Moultrie Bray hearing. It wasn't a hearing. It was a briefing.
Yeah.
And they didn't know anything. They were brought in simply to show that there's some people set up at the I don't know if it was even the UAP task force at that point. It might have just been the UAP task force under the Office of Naval Intelligence. They didn't know anything. They just brought it in, showed it. It was kind of a, I don't know, it was perfunctory. And of course, it was designed to just show, well, you know, we're here and we're doing something. I think it was called by Andrew Carson as the person that called that hearing. And of course, the people that understand the field and understand this issue were incredibly offended. The vast majority of people were just, well, whatever, and looks like they're doing something. I'm happy about that. So Moultrie-Bray, it was an embarrassing, I suppose. The government's done a lot worse, but that was quite a while ago. Things have obviously become far more sophisticated than that. And So I wouldn't worry too much about any damage that that particular hearing created for the movement.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah, this was the House Select Committee. It was on the, it was May 17th, 2022. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's the one. And that's old news. Don't worry about that one. We've moved way on. I mean, the gold standard now of hearings on this subject is the Grush hearing on July 26th last year. The two hearings in 66 and 68 were essentially just for show. Some real people gave some real evidence, but nobody cared. It wasn't going to go anywhere. And then they shut Blue Book down and destroyed NICAP. So, but we're in a totally different place now.
And they started shooting down China spy balloons right after they gave that to kind of solidify their version of what these jets were passing. And I said, there's no transcripts. I bet you the pilot said these things, this thing passed through it by us like we were standing still, but there are no transcripts. And then they showed the video of the night vision of the triangular shapes up in the sky. And they said, oh, this is an artifact of the iris on the SLR, single lens reflex camera. Single lens reflex cameras are obsolete. Okay. And if they've got lenses that have three veins in them instead of six, making triangular shapes, then they need to go get their money back, because this is like the $600 toilet seats. You know, you paid too much for nothing. Those are not professional camera lenses. And second, you don't use an iris on a two-dimensional screen. You open the iris wide up, wide open, and you adjust the luminance level of the screen that you're shooting so that you do not oversaturate the light going into the camera. So again, why would you have an iris closed on a two-dimensional screen? Because when you close the iris down, you get a depth of field, so that stuff in front of your subject and objects behind your subject become more in focus closer to the camera and further away behind the subject. As you close the iris down, you don't need that on a two-dimensional screen. But yet this guy is saying this is what's causing this triangular shape up in the sky. Now, if I was the captain of the ship, I would have been out with my own night vision looking at it personally myself. Where's the transcripts from the captain and the other crew members who did have night vision out looking at this stuff? Nothing. So I saw that as being, you know, another diversion. And this has been going on for such a long time that they're now think, I guess they figure they can still bring this balloon stuff out and say, oh yeah, this is what people are seeing, or balloons. I don't think those were Chinese balloons. I think those were our balloons, and it was all part of the disinformation campaign. And they said, oh, these were coming over during the Trump administration. Doing the old sleight of hand, the old Jedi mind trick, make everybody think this is what's going on, and then give them the evidence by pulling off your own little thing to make it look like, yeah, this is what took place. So what is the scuttlebutt on Capitol Hill right now?
Let me help here.
Okay.
As I've said on countless podcasts over the last year and a half, maybe 2 years, everything that's been happening, including the legislation that in 2020 that was signed by Donald Trump, the legislation that was signed by Biden in 2022 and 2023, the little briefing that Moultrie and Bray came in to just so, oh, you know, we're doing something. It's not, none of it is really important in the standpoint of approving anything. They're not trying to prove anything. They're not even making an effort, because that's not what they want to do. They already know. Whether Moultrie and Bray knows anything is irrelevant. But the government, meaning those in the government that need to know, haven't need to know. already know what the ET issue is. They know about the presence. They know about the craft. They know about bodies. They know about abduction. They've been studying it for years. They've spent hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. They've been doing reengineering through contractors and on and on and on. There's 77 years of engagement of the ET issue real by the government. So they know all of this. So it doesn't matter what Moultrie shows up with or what video they show. It's really irrelevant. What is relevant is, why are they doing anything at all? Why even come to a briefing? Why show anything? Why release some gun camera footage to Christopher Mellon to find out what's going on? Not at all. What is happening in the simplest language is that at some point, enough people in positions of importance within the United States government, even some on the political side, but mostly on military defense, figured out, understood that the truth embargo, this policy, was going to end. It was not going to last much longer. Like a dam that you realize it's not going to last much longer. Okay, you got to do something. But they had successfully, and still to this day, I mean, technically the truth embargo is still in place. I mean, they've successfully kept it going for 77 years. That's pretty good. That it lasted this long is quite amazing, actually. History will marvel at this. I mean, they will be studying this, and so how did they do this? I mean, if there were a dictatorship where people were being, you know, taken out back and shot, and you know, people are being spied on constantly, and you got, you know, stormtroopers, whatever, they would go, oh, yeah, sure. It's like in Russia right now. I mean, you don't open your mouth. If we were that kind of nation, we could get it, but we're not. We have a pretty substantial range of freedoms. The government is limited in how awful it can treat us. And yet they still manage to keep the overall policy of this government. There's nothing there. It's remarkable and extremely, what's the word I'm looking for? It's revealing of how vulnerable democracies can be. And the need for secrecy reform and a lot of other things. But nevertheless, the truth embargo is still here, but it's on its last legs. And they knew that. And so what has been going on all the way back pretty much to 17, but in serious, really seriously got underway into 2020, is our government, God bless it, is trying to prepare the scaffolding, you might say, prepare the structure, both in terms of a program structure, legal structure, legislation, and so forth, personnel. Prepare for what? Prepare for disclosure. Not the landing of ETs or, you know, Independence Day. Let's hope that's not it, but prepare for disclosure. In other words, it's going to happen. It's not like, oh, no, we can keep this going for 20 more years. No, it's going to happen, either because the situation in our country will just decay to the point where so many people are coming forward that the whole thing will get overwhelmed, overrun, or because another nation like China will unilaterally do it. And convincingly, I assure you, in which case we have to disclose, but after China discloses. And they know this is coming, so they're preparing for it. But they can't say why. They can't say, oh, we're doing all this stuff because we've got to find out what this thing is. It's a risk to our aircraft. It's a potential threat, blah, blah, blah. No, they can't. That's what they have to say. They have to couch it that way because they really don't have any choice unless they just want to disclose, in which case they don't have the structure set up. So it's a catch-22. Mm-hmm. So that's what it's all about. And so you just don't judge or measure anything that they do in light of, does it prove anything? Does it show anything? Is it legitimate? Does it make sense? No. No, this is a play, a script being followed kind of loosely by many entities to get to a place where once our president, either first or second or third, finally confirms the ET presence, that all the stuff that's going to happen after that, they will be prepared for. They will be able to deal with it. They will have the laws, the programs, the personnel, immediate funding to be able to deal with essentially 330 million people wanting to know everything they know right away, all at once, as well as international and other countries that are going to make demands on the U.S. To get access to huge amounts of information. They're going to have all kinds of questions to answer, many of which are brutally difficult. And so all of this is to prepare for that. And I have been saying this repeatedly. I have said it to reporters. Host won't call, Times won't call, CBS, NBC, Fox, Nation, Newsnation, they won't call. Actually, Newsnation almost had me on, but somebody stepped in and blocked it. I don't know who and why. But because I guess they don't want somebody to pull the curtain down on this. They want me to go along with it. And I get that. I understand that telling everybody that what is going on is not what you think sort of ruins the surprise, I guess you could say, and it makes it a little awkward for them. But they're mistaken. The fact is that while I understand they can't acknowledge, we have to set all this stuff because we're going to have to disclose the ET presence pretty soon. I understand that they can't say it. That doesn't mean that an activist like me can't say it. And why is that important? Because the whole truth embargo has been a 77-year lie. It's undermined government confidence in government to a level we've never seen before, along with other things. It's incredibly embarrassing. It's awkward. It's very irritating. Okay.
But it's a case of disinformation is what they've been actually throwing at us continuously.
Not disinformation. Not exactly. It's a case of misrepresentation of a script of a project underway because they can't give the actual reason. They are trying to fool us, but not in the way they undermined the truth put out disinformation during most of the truth embargo. This is for higher purpose. They have to get out from under the big lie. And in order to do that, they have to misrepresent what they're doing right now. So to the extent that the public knows that, the public knows that they are having to misrepresent this so they can get it set up so that the president, after the right situation has occurred, can come forward and disclose, thus getting us to the post-disclosure world when they can start telling the truth indefinitely. If people know that, then it's more authentic, and it takes some of the irritation and it makes it a little easier for the government to go through this. In other words, it's okay for the American people to know that the U.S. government is trying to lie or misrepresent themselves for a while so they can set up for a disclosure event that will then put them full bore into the truth business. And they won't have to lie anymore about the ET issue. Technically, there's no reason to. And I'm just letting people know so they don't get too upset. Right? People are losing their mind over this because they're going, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. No, it doesn't. Because it's not what you think. They're not trying to prove anything. They already know.
Steven.
And so I'll just keep saying this over and over again. And I just don't care about the details. I don't care who says what about what. Though I do. I mean, I do. I mean, when we get something really good, of course, we're going to focus on that. But if they do something stupid, I understand why. Now, having said that, the recent development is definitely a challenge. It is an extraordinary thing that I did not think they had the balls to do. So it's one thing to be kind of misrepresenting why Arrow is set up. It's one thing to bring in some stupid video to a briefing in front of a House committee. What happened, in a few words, is that things started moving so fast they panicked and decided to hold it to see if they could recreate 1969 and stop this whole thing in its tracks, throw a Hail Mary pass, as I've said many times. And what can I say? All it did is slow things down a little bit and embarrass the hell out of the Pentagon. I mean, my God. There was a limited number of people in 1969 that were disgusted by the shutdown of Blue Book. They were disgusted by the Condon Report. They were angry over the destruction of CITD, NICAP. A limited, small number of people. The number of people that see right through the Arrow study that was released by the DOD on March 8th, and the amount of embarrassment
is massive. I mean, we're talking tens, if not hundreds of millions of people around the world. No, this is nonsense. Right? So they've just made a complete fool of themselves, but in front of a vaster size audience. It's a desperate move. Now, why? Because the truth embargo started collapsing faster than they expected. It's like the dam started to break sooner than you anticipated, and there's still plenty of people downstream that haven't gone to higher ground. You know what I mean? And it was all triggered by Grush. When Grush came forward, it accelerated the process dramatically, leading to a major maneuver by a powerful politician, Chuck Schumer. So Chuck Schumer introduces the UAP Disclosure Act, or this is the language for this massive UAP Disclosure Act, which was pretty much the whole enchilada. It was everything we needed, along with the other three legislations to narrow. It's all we needed to basically start the whole process of bringing it all out. The reason that he introduced it on July 14 publicly was because Grush came forward, and it puts he and it put the Intel Committee in an impossible position. And they're moving forward in an orderly way, passing legislation, setting things up, getting all ready for the big show. And all of a sudden, Grush shows up and, oh, well, we have ET tech, we have ET bodies. Gets a huge amount of press. The Congress is involved, the House is involved. They're saying there's ETs here. I mean, the whole thing is getting out of hand. And so Schumer and the Intel Committee were in an impossible, very difficult position. I mean, if they stay silent, it looks very, very wrong. But on the other hand, how they respond will be significant. And we're in the middle of a bizarre political situation, unlike anything we probably will ever see, we have seen and may ever see again. So ultimately, it was Schumer that made the decision. We're going to have to step into this. And so he steps into it on July 14, says, here's the language for the bill we're going to put forward this year in the NDAA. And it was just mind-blowing. It included a full control disclosure plan for everything, the review process, the bringing it forward public process, the archiving process. It included substantial oversight by a UAP review board under the president, appointed by the president, key members of Congress elevated to high oversight, given top classification status, subpoena powers to the review board and certain members of Congress on this issue alone, to be able to pull anybody up from any part of the military intelligence complex on this issue and talk to them.
Okay, Steve. We're coming up on a break right now. So when we come back, we can pick up with that. But I want to tell you the story when we come back, part of it, about what Koppel gave me an opportunity to do the show about the Phoenix Lights and the stuff that I discovered that actually in the Washington Post in 1965, this shows that NASA was taken over by the military because there's an article talking about how the unions were upset about jobs being given to retired military personnel. You're listening to The Other Side of Midnight. Steve Bassett is our guest for tonight, and we'll be back right after the break.
If you're in the hyperdimensional, one thing you'll find is essential is our club, 19.5. It's a hyperdimensional storage case, a treasure trove of outer space, our club, 19.5. All the data we've accumulated, the finds here, titled and collated. Why don't you just drop on by and give our club a try? If you're in the hyperdimensional, you'll find our credentials are fine. Club 19.5.
Of midnight.com. Join Richard C. Hoagland and an array of fascinating guests as we explore real-world topics and events through the lens of hyperdimensional physics. Join Club 19.5 to gain access to hundreds of archived shows. Only $9.95 per month. Listen in each Saturday and Sunday to the most compelling and thoughtful broadcast heard in over 160 countries around the world. Real research. Real data. Real science. The other side of midnight.com.
And welcome back to the other side of midnight. Our guest tonight is Stephen Bassett. And we're discussing the latest UAP, UFO, analysis that came out from the AARO. And Stephen, did you see the interview with our friend, it was a lawyer.
Danny Sheehan?
Daniel Sheehan, yes. He was on... this British guy's show, and he was talking about how in the Carter administration, when Carter said he was going to open the files and do and whatever he was going to do to get this out. And He tells his story about how he had access to this top secret or the secret archive of information. And he went in and he wasn't supposed to take in his briefcase or anything like that. But he had tucked a notepad under his arm, and he went in and he started looking through the stuff. He said he looked at it through it like a lawyer, it would have taken a long time. So he kind of skimmed through things really quickly. But then when he got to like the third or fourth thing, he said there were pictures, and there was this typical saucer stuck in the ground at a 45-degree angle. There were soldiers all over the place. There were these film cameras with the dual spools on top of them. He said this looked like something out of the 1950s at that time. And he's looking at symbols, he said, that he'd never seen before or never came across anything like that. And he was able to project the image under the back part of his notepad right after the last page on the inside, and he traced these things, these symbols. And then when he got up, he put the pad under his arm and he walked out and he picked up his briefcase because he had to leave that outside. And then one of the guards said something about, excuse me, let me see that. And he took the notepad from under his arm and he gave it to him. And they went through all the pages, which were blank. Then he gets to the last page, and that's when they stop, and they never turn to one more and saw the back of the notepad, thinking, you know, that was the last page. There's nothing there. And they gave it back to him, and he walked out. And then he says that he told this to the guy who's the head of the AARO, who's saying, oh, none of this stuff is extraterrestrial. It has nothing to do with this and nothing to do with that. And he says, no. He told him exactly what was going on. And yet he's today saying, oh, no, there's nothing there. This is the kind of stuff that most people are not privy to. And then others just dismiss the whole thing. When Koppel gave me the opportunity to do the show about the Phoenix Lights, I got into that because I had a bet with a Nightline writer. There was this tabloid article that said, that we received radio signals from Mars in 1924, and it came in the form of dots and dashes, and it was a doomsday message. Of course, that's the way the tabloids blew it up, of course. But then they said it was reported on in the New York Times and Scientific America. So when I'm talking to this Nightline writer, I said, well, what do you think of this? He said, oh, I don't believe that. And I said, if I go to the library and I find these articles, will you look at this with a more open mind? And he goes, oh, yeah, sure. So I go to the library and I'm looking through the fish film, microfish. And that's what Daniel Sheenan was looking at when he traced those images onto the back of his notebook, because he was able to put the image down on the back of the book and trace them that way. Anyway, I go to the library and I'm looking through all these old articles, New York Times, and I went back to 1924. I started in January and I started looking and reading articles. They were going to listen in for signals from Mars because it was going to be at one of its closest points to the Earth. And they thought there might be life there because they thought they saw canals. And I'm reading along and they asked Charles Francis Jenkins if he would use his new radio photoscopic blah, 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 blah device to save these signals on to a 6-inch wide film. And then I later found out that Charles Francis Jenkins was like one of the inventors of the first mechanical television. And the sync signals that we use in television to this day, this vertical, horizontal, and blanking pulses, he used them to synchronize his mechanical television. But he used that same technique of a spinning disc to scan these signals onto the 6-inch wide film. Then when I get further along, they would say, it's nothing yet, nothing yet. But then I get to the point, like I think it was May or somewhere, maybe it was further in, or maybe it was July. They said, we're receiving these signals as coming in the form of dots and dashes. And of course, back then they thought it was Morse code. And I'm going, when did Morse get to Mars to teach the Martians Morse code? That didn't make any sense. But they looked at it that way. Then you get to August, 1924. And Charles Francis Jenkins is quoted in there saying, we don't think these signals have anything to do with Mars. Quite likely it's heterodyning or interference of radio signals. As for the image of a crudely drawn man's face that appears at intervals of roughly every half hour, it's a freak, something we can't explain. So every half hour, this profile of a face kept showing up on the 6-inch wide film. And it kept repeating at the interval every half hour. And then you get these wannabe geniuses think they know what they're talking about. They're saying, you can't send an image of a face into space unless you know the person's terminal height and width, and you have to have that before you can send an image into space. No. That tells me you don't know the first thing about television, because Tesla suggested that we send an image of a face into space. And if I wanted to send an image of a face into space, all I have to do is send a million images, each one having a resolution based on its position in the transmission, one by one, two by two, three by three, four by four, all the way up to 1 million by 1 million. And whatever terminal width and height of whatever monitor is showing up on, and regardless of which way it's scanning, left to right, right to left, bottom to top, top to bottom, this image is going to show up as soon as that first pixel locks into place and it starts writing across the screen. And it's going to reveal that picture. And then it gets down. So our high definition TVs are 1024 by 768. 1024 is 1,024 lines horizontally, and 768 is the number of lines vertically. Once it starts writing, you're going to see the picture unfolding till it gets to 768. Then the picture's going to scroll up and finish drawing the picture. And then when it gets to that last pixel, it's going to be garbage. And it's going to stay garbage for a half hour, hour, but it's going to repeat at those intervals. Because when we have a remote coming in, if we didn't have frame sinks to lock it to the house, the image would walk through the picture. But just like that old adage, which is more accurate, a clock that runs fast or a clock that's stopped? And it's the clock that stopped because it's at least right twice a day. We're going to have the same thing where it locks into place and you're going to see the image, whether it's upside down, left, right, or whatever. So I'm reading this and I'm going, here we got a face showing up in 1924, and then we get to Mars and what's showing up? A face. I'm going, this can't be coincidence. Somebody was sending something. The only person that could have pulled this off would have been Tesla, but I don't see any reason why Tesla would have done it in the first place. He suggested it, but maybe he was trying to prove a point. Maybe it was him. But this profile looks like Lord Voldemort from Harry Potter. But it's a profile. And then we have in Canada, Alberta, Canada, we have the Badlands Guardian. And they've known about that since 1937. 1937, here's this huge structure, 2,200 feet from top to chest to bottom, and it looks like a Native American profile looking from the side. His shoulder comes out to our right side. It's got two parallel ridges that run down the side. One curves under his neck perfectly. He's wearing a vest. You look at his neck. You zoom in on his neck. He's got two parallel lines going to the back with a pattern in between it. He's wearing a neck band. He's got lips, not a slit, but lips. He's got a nose. And my friend says to me, I'm just surprised it's got an eyelid. And you zoom in on the eye, and sure enough, it's got an eyelid. Too many details for it to be a natural formation. Who built it? And it's not convexed, it's concaved. And I brought this up to Ancient Aliens at the 2018 Alien Con, and I introduced them to the Morgan Curve, and I introduced them to the Badlands Guardian. And when Eric Von Daniken saw the Badlands Guardian, he said, what is this? Where is this? Oh, loud and everything. He was on stage, but that, when people see it, it blows their minds. It's not pareidolia. It is an actual construction. So Season 14, Episode 2, Ancient Aliens does a thing on the Badlands Guardian, which they had no clue existed till I showed it to Kevin Burns. And, I mean, he was excited because when I showed it to Eric, he starts elbowing Eric and going, yeah, you got to see this. Bring that up here. And I take my phone up and I give it to Eric, and that's when he starts going, that is this. He was really excited about it, but they didn't know anything about it. And then, weird thing is, after they did that show, somebody modified Google Earth so that the Badlands Guardian was no longer looking at the location where it was at. Somebody had pointed it to this other location, which they were calling Badlands Guardian, new location, and then they renamed it to Badlands Guardian. It's just a mosaic of poorly done satellite photos all grouped together. And I'm going, why did they do that? Somebody's trying to hide it again. Why? I notified Google and I said, this is their terminology. This is deceptive and misleading. And I put the longitude and latitude of where the real Badlands Guardian is burnt into the picture of the Badlands Guardian. And they immediately put it back where it was supposed to and got rid of that other crap. But you had people going there saying, oh, see, there's nothing here. This is they didn't know that they were being duped. And I want to know why we're getting duped. I mean, if this is real stuff that's right in front of us, and in Utah, oh, my God. I went to Utah because my son used to work.
Keith?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm talking to Stephen.
I'm curious what Stephen thinks of what you're sharing here.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to get his input, too.
Stephen.
Well, I think that my takeaway is to point out that, again, in the 21st century, certainly the last 20 years, but let's just go the last 10, there's just no comparison to the 1960s. When they were able to get a break for about 9 years from the public's incessant demand on this issue, and they were able to just kind of glide on the truth embargo. Then things started getting rough again around the early 80s. But today, the amount
research that is being done, even literally online, the ways that we can go after, we can literally go on Google Earth and look at military bases from space. We can go down to Street View in places. We can look for unusual large and small pictograms within the landscape, as you've done with that. We're all everywhere, right? And we've got media of unbelievable width and depth. How many years now, 10, 12 years of ancient aliens with endless scrutiny of every part of the world. This is, it's just hard to even measure it. And so the idea that the government can get away with in 2024, what they got away with in 69 is utterly ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
And so my work is not about really proving anything. My job is really simple. The government has to end the truth embargo and confirm the ET presence, non-human presence, whatever the hell you want to call it. Once they do that, then all of a sudden, we're able to get to the bottom of these things and start getting the truth. And the government may come out and say, oh, yeah, that was a lie. We told you that, but that's not true. Here's some truth. Whatever. In other words, we can get back to an appropriate, mature way of trying to understand stuff and chronicle it and archive whatever and build an understanding in the post-disclosure world, which is what we should have been doing decades ago. That's what my work is about. It's not about proving anything. The ET presence is proved 1,000 times over, right? Some of the details obviously remain uncertain, but the very fact that they're here is absolutely proven. And I'm just not, I have no time for anything that points in that direction. Now, the reason the government points in the opposite direction is simple. They simply want the truth embargo to continue. And to the extent they can deny, obfuscate, evade, lie, whatever, they'll do it because if it serves keeping the truth embargo going. They need this truth embargo needs to end. Hell, the Cuba embargo of Cuba needs to end. It's a much simpler matter. But our government has lost its way, and that's not something a democratic republic can afford to do. We've got to find our way back to the highway. We're just running through the woods, running into trees, blindfolded. It's nuts. So we've got to find our way back, and to me, there's only one way it's going to get us back there in any reasonable time frame, and that is ending this truth embargo and getting in the truth business as a nation.
Well, the American people,
as a political institution.
The American people voted the people in the Congress so they could keep an eye on these organizations, the military, et cetera. And mm-hmm. I don't see that happening. I see them running amok, doing whatever they want to do. And I remember 2011, September 10th, when Rumsfeld came on and said, oh, we're missing $2.3 trillion from the military budget and we don't know where it went to. And then the next day, 2001, September 11th, all of a sudden everybody's attention gets distracted towards 9/11 and they forgot what Rumsfeld said. $2.3 trillion is enough to build a base on the moon, base on Mars, and build the TR-3Bs to go between these places. And I don't know why people keep dismissing the obvious that's right in front of them. You put this stuff in front of them, and they don't see it. That's what was happening with Utah. When that monolith showed up, I'm watching the pictures coming out, and I'm going, nobody sees the freaking huge puma head sticking out the wall. What is that on the right side of this thing? And then one of the park rangers took a picture looking down into the valley, and you see this huge freaking cat head with two eyes and all of the details. And I'm going, and nobody sees this stuff. But they went in there looking at this silver monolith, didn't see all artwork on the walls and other things. And I'm going, I'm looking at pictures, and I'm not getting the full thing, but I can see this stuff is not natural. Come on. Utah is littered with that kind of stuff. I was taking pictures. I took one picture of what looked like a bust of Nefertiti up on top of this butte, And my wife was walking in front, and this was off in the distance, but I wanted to get that in the shot, and I did. And then next to that is a pillar that's vertically, it's made right next to it with a little stem at the top of it, like it had a head or something on it. And then years later, I'm looking at the pictures, and then I noticed this other object done on a level lower below that. And I showed it to Jonathan Womack. And then he sends that extruded version of that pillar standing on his own little pedestal. But then he sends this other picture, and I said, where did this bird's head come from? And you can see it's a bird's head. And he said, oh, it's on the wall to the right of the pillar that you just said. And I didn't even see that. And when I looked over there, sure enough, there it was. This is artwork. Who put it there? Where did it come from? We're missing a big chunk of history. And these guys don't want us to know our history because I think they figure they're going to lose control. But it's time for us to grow up and move forward. But they're dragging their feet. And I got to give you your props, man, because you've been there the whole time pushing. And these guys have just been, you know, stonewalling and stonewalling. I'm just glad we had at least somebody there who was pushing all of us at this time. I don't know what Stephen Bassett's doing. Stephen Greer. Don't get my Stevens mixed up. He's got his group. They're doing some really out there stuff. You know, they're holding meetings and so forth where they're making contact in the desert or whatever. I don't know how. You know, I haven't had a chance to attend any of them. Do you know what's going on with that?
No, Stephen, Dr. Greer has been continuing his C5 work programs, which he started back in the late 1980s. He's now in it for about 40 years of CE5 work. And he's organizing sort of global CE5. He is the one that will be most associated with CE5 activity, probably in history. He'll be the one that gets the credit really for driving that whole concept, which is he's not the only one, but I mean, nobody's put more effort and time and money into it. The idea that ETs are not telepathic, we know that from tens of thousands of contactees, and they have the ability to actually, I think, perceive our thinking from a great distance. And so people go out and they meditate and they concentrate and they invite them in, and they have lasers to track anything in the sky so people can quickly see it, which makes sense. I've got night vision goggles. In other words, it's a form of interaction. It's a relatively benign. It's not aggressive in any way. And it's been going on for 35 years or more. And not, you know, you see these are a lot of people that are going out there, pretty high level people, government, scientists, military people, whatever. And so again, this idea of writing a report that says there's nothing to this is beyond ludicrous. And I feel bad for Kirkpatrick because history is just going to just destroy him. And the people that either convinced him or forced him to write that report will go probably be unscathed because they're behind the scenes. It's possible that they might get outed. Kirkpatrick might choose to do that. But again, it's just really pathetic. And what can I say? But anyway, that Dr. Greer's doing that. Plus, he's very aggressive. He's trying to put together a RICO lawsuit addressing the illegalities of these issues and doing a lot of good trouble. He's had, you know, millions and millions of dollars of resources over the last 40 some years. I just wasn't very good at making money as a younger man. I was awful at it. I mean, really. And that's on me. But us military brat kids, we're not exactly trained to be our entrepreneurs in our early days. I mean, we're living on bases and whatever. But Dr. Greer made a great deal of money. He's invested millions in this. So
He's not going away. He has an approach. I have a different approach. Danny Sheehan has an approach. And I'm not the only lobbyist now. There's probably 8 or 9 or 10. There has been more than one lobbyist for almost probably 7, 8 years. MUFON has a substantial lobbying firm working for it. It's, you know, well paid. My lobbying was always media mostly, and just various activist maneuvers, engaging the media, engaging social media, using the web, because it doesn't cost a lot of money to do that, right? So, and then giving lectures and interviews. I've probably given more interviews than anybody ever alive or dead, and that's I've been able to maintain that only because of the podcast revolution, because I was already kind of in the groove when the podcast revolution came along. I'm just interviewing like crazy and very happy to do it. Some people only have a limited number that they'll do before they just that's it. They can't do it for a while. I'll take almost any interview from anywhere, anytime, because I'm an activist. My job is to communicate a message. So that's where Guru's at right now. And he's also done, he's written 4 books, done another of documentaries. I mean, his body of work is probably as great as anybody in the field, period.
What's your take on Lou Elizondo?
Well, Lou was part of the group that came out in 2017. Basically a group of individuals with military intelligence careers.
You don't think he's a disinformation like, God, what's his name? The Linton
Moore.
Doty. Richard Doty.
Well, that's an easy answer. No.
Okay.
So, so he's played a very important role in the last 7 years as one of the 10 that came forward with the TTSA and initiated what amounts to a sort of a disclosure process or adding to the disclosure process in very meaningful ways, because these are people who have credentials. They have gravitas. You can't dismiss them as like just another UFO person. I mean, now they work for the CIA for 30 years. What? And so Lou played his role, did a number of things, but gave many interviews, helped create a history series. And history will note that. And I think he will have a role in the post-disclosure world as well. But the ones that were most visible, particularly the ones that went on social media, were going to take the heavy heat. And of all the people that came forward, the one that got the most heat was Lou Elizondo. Mm-hmm. And the world of Twitter and social media is not fair. It's highly prejudiced. It's even dangerous. And so you go there with a certain understanding that this is, it's like going into a war zone, not going into combat, right? And the more controversial the issue, the more heat you're going to take. And he took it all. I mean, he got brutally hit from social media. Nothing unusual about that. It's happening all the time.
Yeah.
But we're talking about the most important issue in the world, and he has a formal background with DIA and military intel. So what do you think was going to happen? You think people are going to welcome with open arms? I mean, a lot of people obviously did, and a lot of people supported him, but he was just – he went through hell for years. These are the things I pay attention to, Keith. These are the things that are important to me. The process of disclosure, the way the media handles it, the way the social media handles it, the way the government is handling it, and then networking as much as possible in order to be able to have as much impact. That's where I'm at. I don't get too wrapped up in the details.
Okay.
And
can you hold
yeah.
it right there? Because I forgot
sure.
I'm going to blow through the break at the top of the hour. You're listening to The Other Side of Midnight. My guest tonight is Stephen Bassett. And we'll return right after the break.
There's everything to find.
For tonight, because Richard lost power, Keith Morgan, the discoverer of the Morgan Curve on Mars. My guest is my long-term friend that I've known for quite a while, Stephen Bassett, and he's got my backing all the way because he's one of the guys that's really put a lot of time in to trying to get the truth out to the American people, and we were warned by Eisenhower of the military-industrial complex, because I guess they want to still stay in control and keep us in the dark. But they're now dealing with a new generation of people who think outside the box, and they can see through the lies. And the technology is there to allow them to see through the lies, but then there's technology there that allows these guys to continuously try to cover up what's going on. So, Steve, where do we leave off?
Well, I was just saying that I'm inviting people to focus on the disclosure process. In other words, not about what's the latest proof of the ET issue, whatever, but rather, are we moving towards a confirmation event or are we not? And we were moving forward aggressively until this Arrow report kind of threw up a bit of a wall. But as I said, the what triggered the Arrow report was Chuck Schumer's announcement of the UAP Control Act in July 14, in response to Grush. Then Grush testified 12 days later in front of the House Oversight Subcommittee and repeated everything under oath, which just took it all to another level. And then at that point, the situation was like it's like a four-alarm fire from the standpoint of the truth embargo managers. I mean, they're seeing the dam breaking literally in front of them, and a billion gallons of water is going to come crashing down on them. And so they took two very aggressive actions designed to somehow stop the disclosure process like they did in 69. These people are isolated. They work, you know, in air-conditioned offices, go to the Pentagon dining rooms. They don't go on social media. They're scared to death of it. They're all isolated, insulated. So they thought maybe they'd get away with it. So
First, the defense contractors convince some powerful Republicans who get a lot of defense contractor donations to their campaigns to go into the Reconciliation Committee and gut all the powers out of the Schumer bill, which they succeeded in doing. But in doing so, they outed themselves and attracted a lot of attention. But even more so, the fact that they gutted the bill, particularly the eminent domain clause, meant that the opponents to that bill were confirming there's non-human tech here, because the eminent domain was all about non-human tech. And so if there's no non-human tech, non-human bodies, there's no need to worry about an eminent domain. So they essentially, in order to try to push back, had to confirm the very thing they were pushing against. And so that kind of didn't go over well. I think clearly they were surprised at how fast the internet responded to all that. And so they decided to go deeper. And I don't know the details. I'm not saying I know. I don't know even Danny knows. He knows more than me. But somehow the Pentagon was able to convince a very disgruntled Dr. Kirkpatrick, who was in an impossible position as the head of what amounts to a I call it a Potemkin village. In other words, it was just Arrow just needed to exist and be ready for disclosure, not to do anything. That's why they didn't fund it much. They don't spend any money. It wasn't time yet. So he was this impossible position. And I think he got pretty upset about it and angry. I just don't think he's a pretty smart guy. And the idea that he hasn't figured out, if he didn't already know there's an ET presence, I find hard to believe. But he was angry. And so he's angry. He quits. And I think they went to him and they said, you know, we saw you went through this, but we'd like you to do one more favor for your government. We want to study out. We want you to be the author. And it's going to basically do the Condon Report did, which is essentially say we've studied all this stuff all the way back to the 1947, and there's just no evidence at all of anything non-human. And all I can say is there was no chance that that was going to be believed by a significant portion of the people that are knowledgeable, and the number that are knowledgeable are very large. They knew that the vast majority of Americans would assume, well, if that's what they said, it must be true. That's always the case. But that majority has gotten smaller and smaller. And the minority does know about this, not only is much larger, but it's much more sophisticated, much more knowledgeable. And so we're just going to rip it to pieces over and over and over again. So this is a stopgap measure, a Hail Mary pass. I don't think anybody caught it in the end zone yet. But the scapegoat is Sean Kirkpatrick. He's the one that's going to take the hit when this turns around. Now, I will be happy to back him. In other words, I'm happy to go public and say, no, he's not the one. You've got to look beyond him. You've got to look into the DOD. Who orchestrated that report? And it's not a matter of him being fired. That's not going to happen, but they need to be known. We need to know who did this. History needs to know that.
Do you think these guys are going to
extraordinary people?
You think they're going to enforce the fact of the NDAs? People come forward and actually rat out the guys that have been keeping the thumbs on this whole thing?
I don't think it is ratting out the guys. There are the dilemma that they have. And this is what Chuck Schumer set out to do. He checkmated them. They didn't know. They've lost the chess game. Don't even know it yet. By forcing them out of cover and ultimately forcing it to do a stupid error report like that, they've completely undermined what the last vestige of confidence that people have in the Department of Defense on this issue. I'm not saying that's the case with everything. And because they have no power over the Senate Intel Committee, I mean, they can threaten them, I suppose, privately or something, or try to bribe them, but what are they going to do? I mean, the Senate Intel Committee can hold a hearing anytime it wants to. Of course, that's the call of Mark Warner, and of course, I'm talking about Warner all the time. He's the man. He's the one that can change history right now and can't do it too soon. And so they realized now they're virtually at the mercy of Mark Warner. Chuck Schumer's not the problem. It's Mark Warner. And all Schumer did was just make them look even more stupid and force their hand. So right now the situation looks very favorable. I don't know what else they can come up with start arresting. I mean, I suppose they could arrest Grush and try to make him the next, you know, reality winner or whatever the hell, but that'll generate a massive blowback. The arrogance of the, what we'll call the national security idealists, the super patriots within our military intelligence complex is massive. It doesn't mean everybody's corrupt. It doesn't mean everybody's evil. It doesn't mean everybody wants to harm other people or even our own government. But there is enough of these types inside our military intelligence community that it has distorted it and created a massive confidence gap, as well as undermining the effectiveness and of our national defense, wasting tons of money, creating all kinds of distrust, and classifying everything they can. They need to be stopped, which means replaced.
I agree.
And the truth embargo could lead to that. The truth embargo could put I think the truth embargo will lead to a very large list of reforms. And one of the reforms will be reforming the military intelligence complex and getting rid of the hyper patriots, I guess you could call them, or whatever, that are prepared to sacrifice almost anything to, quote, defend us against everything. And are prepared to spend billions of dollars killing hundreds of thousands of people with not a lot of pretext. I mean, I'm afraid for those that have been paying attention since the end of World War, or the end of the Korean War, U.S.'s record is not good. It's undermined our moral authority. It's disgraced us. It's embarrassed us. It's divided the American people. And politicians, of course, have to take a great part of the blame. But our military intelligence complex, unfortunately, is not what we want. Certainly, it's what Eisenhower warned about. Well, he mentioned industrial complex. It's really the military intelligence industrial complex, MIIC. And it has gotten away with murder. It's had its way. It's doing very well. It's comfortable. It has all kinds of protections. And it's in its own way a threat to the republic. Not to the same degree that an autocratic dictatorship in an autocratic country is a threat. It's much more complicated than that, but it's more reformable ultimately. And that, they probably know that. And I think a lot of them are probably going, okay, look, reform is coming, but I'm going to hold it off until I retire. I get my retirement. I'm living in Florida. Life is good. Nobody's going to call me up on the phone. Yeah, that kind of thing. Maybe they'll make it to Florida. Maybe they won't. But the truth embargo has to end, and it will.
Right. Working at ABC, I got to meet a lot of celebrities. One, I've met my childhood hero, Senator John Astronaut Glenn. And mm-hmm. I went into the green room at Nightline, and I introduced myself to him and just talked to him. This was before I discovered what was really going on with the Morgan curve and everything on Mars. And we got into a conversation, and I said, so what do you think of all this UFO stuff? He says, well, I'm an agnostic when it comes to this kind of stuff, but I've got really good friends who've told me they've seen stuff, and I can't just dismiss them. But he said, most of these photographs are blurred, balls of light, out of focus. You can't make out what they are. And I said, have you seen the film shot by this Swedish farmer? He's got one arm. He gets his film done at the local film store. And he said, no, I haven't. So the next night he was on Nightline, I had my visitors from the Pleiades book. And it's a big coffee table book with all of Edward Meyer's photos, and well, a lot of them, good ones. And if anybody has seen the X-Files and they've seen that poster that says, I want to believe over Mulder, that's a rendition of his photograph. That's how sharp they are. And I'm showing this to Senator Glenn, and he says to me, wow, if just one of these is real, this is fantastic. And he autographed the book. I didn't ask him to autograph it, but he autographed it. Hey, that's my childhood hero. Hey, he's fine. And then in December, because that was October 88, in December, that's when we had the camera crew assigned to go out to Goddard for the briefing that Richard Hoagland, Dr. Mark Carlotto, and Earl Torn were giving to the scientists and engineers, and we had a camera crew assigned. Leo Meilinger has gotten a crew assigned for World News Tonight. And I'm sitting in a packed auditorium with scientists and engineers, people standing around the walls, and I'm going, where's my camera crew? There was these two non-professional cameras there videotaping this thing. I get home. I'm pissed because I think ABC thought it was too stupid to send a crew for, or something along those lines, and I turn the TV on. And Dan Rather says, today, NASA held a briefing about Mars. And I'm going, wait a minute, what am I looking at? There was no camera crews there. And then when I realized we were at the National Press Club, NASA had sent out a press release that day announcing a briefing about Mars at the National Press Club. So everybody who was supposed to be going out to Goddard turned around and went down to the National Press Club, including my camera crew. But I was sitting out there in this packed auditorium watching these guys show the mathematical alignments and everything else. And Dr. Carlotto gave me that orthographically correct photo of the Cydonia region. And I was so pissed, I decided I was going to tell Berkman Murphy, president and vice president of Cap Cities ABC, and Rune Ehrlich, head of ABC News, hey, we got suckered. We got duped. And I took this photograph after I wrote the letter, and I said, I'm going to put a picture of this in each one of the letters going to these guys. And when I put it in a copy machine, dumb me, didn't push the photo button, and the picture came out black and white, not multiple gray. And that's when I noticed the little white mounds that are now standing out like gangbusters from around this big pyramidal structure. And when I played connect the dots, I had a one-third to almost a perfect half a circle. And then I find these things are spaced exponentially. And that's when I said, nature didn't do this. And then I showed it to Earl Torn because I found a ray across it as well. He finds the X and Y axis. And that's when I was convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that the stuff sitting on Mars is not a trick of light and shadow. Because there's no such thing as mathematical pareidolia. Math is or it isn't. It's one of those absolutes that you can't dismiss. And from that point on, I really started delving into this. And it really got my attention was when Phil Klass insulted me in the hall of Nightline after him and Stanton Friedman went toe-to-toe on Nightline. And Ted and I were walking down the hall, and I tell tell him the story, and I tell Phil Klass the story of what I saw when I was in high school, and how this light was making its 90-degree turns and 45-degree angle turns and climbing like a bat out of hell and never stopped. And he looks at me and goes, yeah, you saw a spaceship from Alpha Centauri. And that's when that pissed me off. And I started doing my research, and I said, I'm going to either prove him right or I'm going to prove him wrong. And everything I came across proves him wrong. And maybe Rich will let me get a chance to host again, or actually have me on as a guest, and I can tell my story about my encounters firsthand, not just the one in high school, but the ones since that time, face to face with these guys. And I don't talk about it that much, but it's a part of what's happening to me. And I know this is not a joke. I know that there's some other history to this planet that has been hidden, kept under wraps for whatever reason, these guys to keep control or whatever. But I know we're not alone in this universe, because I have seen them face to face on two occasions. And I know we're coming to a head. And if Notre Dame is right, we're going to encounter these guys, and we're going to be fully aware and interactive with them by 2032. Now, see, I had colleagues at ABC that laughed at me because I was reading Notre Dame stuff. Of course, the people that were interpreting what he said, none of it made any sense, but my interpretation seemed to fall right in place. because I told them in 1985, I said the Berlin Wall is coming down in 1989. And they're laughing and going, oh, no, communism moves in. It never moves out. Never going to happen. And I said, all right, we'll find out in 1989. 1989 came along, November, and guess what? Berlin Wall came down. Communism did start to fall all across Eastern Europe. And I said, well, we were told this, but nobody was listening to this guy because they thought he was a quack. And, oh, it's just, you know, somebody's belief. And I had the Gulf War. Mavis would soon die en route, and then would come such destruction of man and animal and fire from the center of the earth. And what happened? Mavis, spell it backwards. What do you get? Sabam. And he said, a country to the north would attack a small spit of land between the ocean and sand, which was Kuwait. And all of it fell into place. And the fires from the center of the earth, the idiot set the oil wells on fire. I had all of that. And I'm sitting here. Now I'm kind of scared. And I'm going, okay, this is too coincidental. And he said the man-made mountains would fall into the harbor in the new city. And I'm like, okay, skyscrapers are considered man-made mountains. And I said, okay, I think the World Trade Centers are coming down. And sure enough, I didn't expect idiots to fly planes into them because I thought an earthquake was going to do it. But I guess history doesn't follow one single path. But I stopped reading this stuff because it got kind of scary that I was on course that close to everything that was going on. And the last thing I did read is that he said in the year 20 plus 12, which is 32, that we would be fully aware and interactive with extraterrestrials. He didn't say extraterrestrials, but the way he words it, it's extraterrestrials. So that's the last thing I'm looking forward to, is watching this unfold and how it comes to fruition. It's going to happen because he said you wouldn't be able to predict these things if they weren't set in stone. And I know we're not in the multi-universe or things aren't following the course. Anyway, let me stop talking. Steve, Bob Lazar busted out Area 51. Remember the, Bob Lazar, Element 115? I'm looking at the next generation coming up, and these young kids are talking about, oh, Bob Lazar is a liar and this, that, and the other. And we're looking at satellite photos of what's considered S4 at Papoose Lake. And we don't see any this, that, and the other. And I'm like, now, if you could find it, idiots like you could find it, do you think the Russians couldn't find it with their spy satellites and so forth? Yeah, and you guys think he's telling a lie. He told us about Element 115, and they created it. But, of course, the version that they created didn't last very long because it wasn't created by a natural processes. And just like there's different versions of hydrogen and other elements, there's probably a stable version of Element 115. And I think Bob was telling us the truth the whole time. And I actually met a guy on a plane when I was going to Texas, and I'm walking down the aisle, and I got my Morgan Curve shirt on, but the picture's on the back of it, and this old guy says, oh, the Morgan Curve, and I looked at him and smiled because I thought he had, you know, fairly decent eyesight even though he's wearing glasses. Then he says, yeah, that's on Mars in the Cydonia region. And I said to the stewardess, I said, I want to sit next to him. This guy starts to tell me how he was working at one of the lakes out in Nevada. And I said, you worked at Area 51? He said, nah, there's other lakes out there. I said, Papoose Lake? Oh, you didn't hear that from me. And I said, okay. And then he starts to tell me these stories about how he was caught up in a chemical accident because they had come up with the fuel for the SR-71 and how by the time they got to the crew that was working on whatever they were working on, they said he must have been without oxygen for at least 5 minutes, and he was the only survivor. And then he tells me about how they had to grow a ceramic lens for the camera on the SR-71, because when you're moving at Mach 3, the air friction causes a normal lens to warp and distort. And that's how they came up with the lens. And I said, grow a ceramic lens? Because I didn't even know you could grow a ceramic lens. And he said, yeah, that was the easy part, but getting it to stop was the hard part. And I'm sitting here, I'm listening to living history. And he tells me he's Russian. And he said he came over with the paperclip guys and Von Braun and the rest of them. And he said at some point, the S4 guys, the area, got rid of all the Russians. And Bob Lazar said the same thing. And Bob said they must have figured something out because they got rid of all the Russians. And that must have been the time that they figured out there was a flaw in the math, because Ben Rich said there was a flaw in the math, but they figured it out. And he said, we have the ability to travel amongst the stars. We could take E.T. home tomorrow, but these things are locked up in such black projects. It would take an act of God to get them released. So they've got the technology. We've got the technology, but they're not letting that information out because it gives them the upper hand. And I know they can open wormholes. How do I know that? I was standing on the roof of a parking garage, going to my car. I hear this jet engines, and I look up in the sky, and there's this four-engine jet with these fighter jets following behind it, and it's trailing something. And I thought they were doing in-air refueling, but then I look up in front, and there's the clouds are really thick, but there's this circular opening in the clouds where I see blue sky through, and it's a pretty almost perfect circle. Yeah, I know. Got to get back to Stephen. And I see these planes fly into the circle, and all the sound stops. No jet engines, and then the circle starts to dissipate. So I've had experiences, and maybe one day I'll be able to tell all of them on my own time, but you are our guest. So, Stephen, do you think 2032 may be the time that we really get to know what we're doing?
It's not a bad target. My simple thinking on this is that the ETs wanted to force the issue. They could any time. They've chosen not to. So there must be some sort of time frame here.
Okay, Stephen. I'm sorry, Stephen. I got to go into break because I'm right at the break point. But hold that thought. We're going to come back to you. All right. You're listening to The Other Side of Midnight. Our guest tonight is Stephen Bassett. I'm your host in place of Richard Hoagland, Keith Morgan, discoverer of the Morgan Curve on Mars. And we'll be right back.
TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com. Talk radio with pictures on demand. Liberate your hyperdimensional time scale and non-linearly access over 400 hours of conversation at the cutting edge of science and thought. Join Club 19.5 to get access to exclusive content that fits your interests and time schedule. Filter episodes by guest or subject. Membership costs $9.95 a month, 33 cents a day. Talk radio with pictures on demand. TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com.
TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com. Tune in to listen to Richard C. Hoagland and his fascinating guests. Join Club 19.5 to get access to exclusive member benefits. Search the archives. Listen to past episodes anytime on any device. Membership costs $9.95 a month, 33 cents a day. Support the broadcast that provides you with the most interesting conversation available. Talk radio at the cutting edge of science and thought. TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com.
And welcome back to The Other Side of Midnight. We're going to get back with Steve now. Steve, there's a lot of players in what's going on, and there's new players coming up out of the woodwork that are telling their stories. And I know a lot of these guys are telling the truth. With Bentwaters, when it came down to Bentwaters, those guys went through heck with all the things that were going on, and them dealing with, you know, something that was well beyond their understanding of what was happening with the craft and everything in the woods. Do you think stuff like that is going to help break this thing through? I forgot to open you on the air. So go ahead.
Yeah, the Bentwaters case ultimately proved to be another nuclear weapons tampering case. There have been quite a few of these, and they're known, and we have witnesses to them. The Bentwaters case, though, was much more complicated than, say, the nuclear shutdowns at Malmstrom and Minot and in the Soviet Union. So the witnesses to it had a really rough time. Plus, it was pretty – well, it was just a rough time. It got a lot of publicity. But the witnesses to the nuclear turnoffs at Malmstrom and Minot have not had an easy time either. I mean, they've been ignored. The Air Force will have nothing to do with them because they can't deal with them, because if they do, it just brings the issue forward. So they've just been ignored for all these years. These are pretty good men. So – ultimately, I believe that a significant number of nuclear weapons tampering witnesses will be testifying in front of the Intel Committee, assuming there's, say, 20 witnesses, which is really all they need for 1 week of hearings to end this embargo. Perhaps 5 or 6 will be testifying to the ET's involvement, ET's awareness of and engaging of our nuclear weapons, in a way that seems to be pretty clear. They're warning us about them. So that's going to be pretty significant. These are all men with careers in the Air Force, great records, and they'll be taking an oath like they did when they signed up to serve. So they're going to be very powerful witnesses, and they're finally going to have their day in front of millions of people. I don't know how many millions are going to watch that Senate Intel Committee, but it will make stars out of some of those committee members, and it will make history. So, yeah, I mean, that's going to be there. It's going to be part of it. As far as Bob Lazar, one of the interesting stories, your listeners may not know this, but another very high-level documentary is being done about him, which I think is going to go beyond the last documentary that was done about him a couple of years ago. So his story's not over yet. And my jury's out. It will not surprise me at all if he ends up being a very significant historical figure. A bit messy, but nevertheless, it may be fundamentally important. There are quite a few high-level people that think he worked at Area 51 or S4, and there are those that say he didn't. The government obviously doesn't want us to know one way or the other, as they play their games. But so I kind of hope Bob's story is true, or at least some of it, most of it, and then it comes out. But there's quite a few other stories, every bit as important, that needs to be validated, so these people, as they finish out their lives, can feel that they contribute to the truth process. The United States government has devoted so much time to spending trillions of dollars and making liars out of people, undermining their credibility, using them, lying to the American people, using us. If this was a dictatorship, it would make sense. That's what you would do. Of course, under the control of a dictator, serving the dictator. But we're not a dictatorship. And they do it anyway. And that's what Eisenhower was talking about. He understood
that you don't have to have a dictatorship in the aftermath of World War II and the aftermath, of course, of the extraterrestrial presence becoming known, which Eisenhower knew about. You don't have to have a dictator for the military intelligence or the national security structures to completely go off the deep end. And he was right, and they did. And the people that were running this military intelligence industrial complex for most of its history were baby boomers. These were my generation, ones that are born right after the war. They started taking over this whole shebang when they started reaching their 30s, which would have been in the late 70s, early 80s, and then ran it. To some degree, are still running it. And so I kind of feel like the baby boomers, the generation, which is my generation, has an obligation to end it. I mean, our generation basically built up, maintained the truth embargo for all these years, and so my generation should end it. And believe me, this, you know, Danny and I are just a couple of, Danny Sheehan and I are a couple months apart in age. There are quite a few people that are in that age bracket, plus a lot of the witnesses that are going to testify are in that age bracket. They're baby boomers, born after the war, because all the troops came home, and they hadn't seen a woman for a long time, or a male for a long time. You're a woman. And so they had a lot of babies, and those babies ended up running the national security state. So that's how I kind of break things down. And we'll see who the heroes are, and we'll see who the scapegoats are, and we'll see who the villains are, if we're lucky. History is supposed to do that. That's what historians are supposed to do.
Yeah.
Let's hope they do it in this case.
Well, I'm pretty sure we're headed on the course now that's going to get us out of this hole. And I don't know how they're going to dig their way out, because people are going to realize they have been lied to this whole time. And these guys have been pulling the wool over their eyes with disinformation. And they know what they're doing, because it's psychological warfare that they've been playing on for the whole time. But they're doing it to their own people, the American people. I just know that it's going to come to a head. There is no, sure. There's nothing else they can do. We're now living in with a generation that's growing up that's technologically savvy, and they should be able to think for themselves. But even then, you've got those who are self-educated, or they think they want to be self-educated, and they know what's going on. And they're the ones that get the wool pulled over their eyes, because there's people feeding disinformation. The internet's become a cesspool, right? And when it was just the ARPANET, and I was on there, there was just colleges, military, and there was no people trying to pull scams on you and make up stuff and things like that. It was a real collaboration between universities. The military had their little division, but we never dealt with that. And now it's just, you know, open to anybody who thinks they can operate a computer. And most of it's garbage. My nephew thought the earth was flat until I said, explain how you get 6 days, 6 months of daylight and 6 months of darkness at the poles, and then it shifts after 6 months. I said, how, you tell me how to do that. And then he confronted his little flat earth guys, and they vilified the hell out of him and then ostracized him. So now he thinks we live inside the planet. Oh, gosh. So it went from bad to worse. But when you have people with mentalities like that who do not understand, yes, you know, there's a lot of things out there that we can't explain. But the basic things, like the earth being round, because people have flown up to that altitude, we've put satellites up in space, and they don't know how they stay up there, let alone most people don't even know how a plane works, what keeps the plane aloft. We still have a lot of educating society to understand those simple things, let alone the species who has control of forces that we have no clue about. We are just barely scratching the surface, and a lot of these theories are just that, and very few absolutes in this world. I think that we can make a big difference if we can get everybody thinking in the same direction and realizing there is a lot more to this universe than meets the eye, but you just have to stop and think and not just accept stuff, because like I said, cesspool internet, and people will lie and they put up garbage and they say this, that, and the other, and people just accept it. Anyway, I'm not going to talk, but Stephen.
Let me respond this way.
Uh-huh.
The reason I talk about the baby boomer generation is the millennials are tech savvy, but they don't know the history of this.
True.
And the Gen Zs. Not Gen Zs, the, what do they call them? This very recent generation born just before the turn of the century, what do they call them? They know even less, and they're not inclined to know and to learn. This is a whole different generation coming up. They're going to have very different values. They're going to read less. They're going to scroll more, whatever. And so, If the truth embargo could survive the die-off of the baby boomer generation, which are dying off, I mean, let's face it. I mean, the very top of the baby boomers is the people born in 46. That was me, so 77. So within 10 years, huge numbers are going to die off. The Gen Xs are a little more savvy, but if they can push this long enough, they're going to get to a point where you've got huge generations just don't care, don't know. And they may be able to push this truth embargo deep into this century. But, of course, it won't work because we're going to have a nuclear war. I mean, we're practically there. So we'll have the nuclear war, and that'll be the end of that. But they don't necessarily think that way. I mean, they're thinking, well, yeah, we may have one, we may not have one. We're going to play the game that we want to play it. So we really need to get it done. The generation that run this thing needs to get it done. And just about everybody, well, not everybody, but there's a huge number of people in the baby boomer generation that are front and center on this, including many, many witnesses. So that's another way of looking at this. And this is the kind of thing I'd say to Mark Warner if I ever had a chance to sit down with him, and I'm sure I never will, the basis for why he needs to make the decision to call the hearing and put aside most of the immediate existential issues that come to mind right away, you know, the survival of the Democratic Party, the survival of democracy, the election, who's going to win the Iraq war, I mean, the Ukraine war, and all of that, which has been going on forever and will continue until we have major reforms. And so this decision to end this truth embargo is one of the most important in history. And right now it's in the hands of Mark Warner, basically. I mean, you could say it's in the hands of Biden. I mean, he can come forward any time. He knows there's an ET presence, I assure you. That doesn't mean it's political wise for him to go there at all, at least not without preparation, without a platform on which to stand. But he could come forward, and maybe he would if things got really out of hand in order to move things in another direction. But there's far more resistance for him to do it than there is for Mark Warner. Mark Warner, the Intel Committee, has been a front and center on this. They're the heroes. He would just consolidate that heroism. The Senate Intel Committee goes down in history. He goes down in history. Schumer goes down in history. The world changes. There's huge upside to this. And we were able to start looking at things differently, including this election and how it's going to be conducted and what people are going to talk about and how, to what degree this issue post-disclosure could be discussed in this election so people can speak to it while we decide whether to elect them after they spend $6 billion trying to buy our votes. And so forth and so forth. I mean, this is what's in the hands of Mark Warner right now. There have been people like that at these kinds of junctures in history. Some of them made the right call. Some of them didn't. And history turns on those calls. And, well, when they make a wrong call, bad things happen. So what will history record here?
my job is to make sure that history knows that there was a decision to be made. I'm the only one talking about Warner and the committee in this way, or talking about this process of setting up all this in lieu of a disclosure event that they felt was coming. No one else is doing it. And I mean, there are people on Twitter that allude to it. And of course, I have a strong Twitter presence. Please follow me on at Steve Bassett. But they're not reaching out. For whatever reason, it's interesting. The media is okay. I mean, it's like Tim Burchett wants to say there's an ET presence. They'll bring him on and he'll say it. And that's pretty important. He's a member of Congress, longtime member of Congress. And so him saying that is important. But as you can tell, it doesn't really go anywhere beyond that. It's, I know Tim Burchett thinks there's ETs here. Okay, great. Maybe he's right. Maybe he's wrong. But he is a congressman. Take note of that. So they'll let that happen. But they don't want anybody coming on and trying to explain the actual process underway that strips away the facade and allows at least some authentic understanding of it. They don't – the media doesn't want that. And I'm giving podcasts like crazy. I mean, it's all over the net. This message is everywhere. And I'm just waiting for some of these news entities to call. They are not calling. I'm not going to go beat their door down. I'm not going to make a scene of myself. Keep talking about it until somebody shows up and says, you know, I did an interview in the Washingtonian recently, which I kind of went there, and that was good. It was a nice interview. The second one they've done, and it's a pretty important magazine in this town. Everybody in this town that's high end, their family at least, gets the Washingtonian magazine. It's a must. They haven't triggered those articles. Very good ones have not triggered responses from Washington media of any consequence. So the Washingtonian obviously has reached out. That's great. I appreciate that. But of course, you know who I'm talking about. So we're at this kind of tipping point. And I'm kind of standing there at the intersection, as is Warner in different ways. Janie Sheehan, same thing. And we're trying to, one way or another, we're trying to inflect it in the right direction, which is all you can do ultimately when you're talking about history at this level. You don't command it. I mean, there are dictators who try to command history. Putin is doing that. He's trying to command history, bend it to its knee, be a legendary czar, whatever is in his mind. I don't know. But you can't do that in our country yet.
Right.
And history has been made by the decisions of dictators. If you look back, emperors and dictators and kings have stood at the inflection points at various times, and because they have this all power, they just make it happen, and we go the direction they want us to go. And most of the time, those directions are not good. Occasionally, a leader like at that junction point will actually make the right call, but it's the minority. So now we're in a time when there's several people sitting at the inflection point. Putin is one, Xi Jinping is another, Biden certainly, and Warren particularly, Mark Warner. And which way they decide to go is going to determine whether this century is a catastrophe. I don't mean bad century, rough time. I'm talking catastrophe kind of stuff. We've had those in the past. There was a century that was a catastrophe for virtually all of South America when virtually all of South American native people died. That's a catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. It could be that way. This century could be that way. So we're standing at the crossroads. We're doing the best we can. And no one engages the media more than I do. So that's my leverage. That's my strong suit. But I engage it in a way. I'm not going to kiss their ass and hope they come or tell them what they want to hear. They're either going to come for the authentic stuff or they're not going to come and I'm not going to approach them.
I'm hoping that you get your props and you get them before it's not posthumously, but you get your props, because you've really stood in there and you've hung in there and you've the envelope, and that's what needed to be done. But you are up against an establishment that's been doing this lying and manipulating for such a long time. But I think your day is coming, and all the truth's going to come out, and they can't hide it anymore. Because one, even though we got a big division in the generation coming up in terms of their abilities to pay attention and learn,
mm-hmm.
I think they're going to make a big difference. My nephew tells me, oh, he can program, and I'm going, oh, so which programming language are you using? Oh, that's how you program. I don't bring it in. What kind of way are you programming? Turns out he's using ChatGPT or whatever. And I'm going, so do you know what AI stands for? And he didn't
tell me. Of course.
It's artificial intelligence. Yeah. Use your own intelligence, okay? You can't sit and rely on some program that somebody wrote that you don't know what it's going to do, how it's going to react, because you have to think for yourself. And a lot of the generation coming up, they don't want to do that. They just want things handed to them. And that's not how it works. You've got to think. But and this subject is one of the ones that you have to really stop and think about. And you can't let belief step in the middle of it, because you have to look at the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Carl Sagan said, mathematics is the universal language. Well, I can tell you, no, it's not. Mathematics was created by man to make sense, or to actually bring together the real absolute, which is quantity. Everything. There's a quantity of everything. That's the absolute. I can go to any country or any place, don't speak the language, but if I start holding fingers up one at a time, they know I'm counting up or down. And if I start taking the fingers down, they're either counting down or up. But they know that I'm doing numbers. They know I'm doing quantity. And the math is all based on that. And that's what man created to make sense of quantity. But even animals understand quantity. A mother duck, she doesn't say, I got five ducklings, I only see four. She knows one's missing. Right? It's all instinct. It's all understanding quantity. And that is the universal language. The math, yeah, that's for the higher level intelligences out there that are savvy to being able to understand it at that level. That's why Ben Rich said there's a flaw in the math. Well, they figured it out. I don't know what that flaw was, but obviously it gave them the ability to do anti-gravity and travel at speeds faster than light by bending space-time or whatever, warping it. But don't know. But I would like to see all of it come to light at some point. And if we can't learn to live with one another and get along, it's not going to come easy. It's not going to be a smooth road. But I think these guys have an agenda. And I think they told our governments, hey, let your people know that we exist. You've got X amount of time. And if you don't, we're going to do it for you. And I think that time has come and gone, and they are making their own moves to get the word out. And these guys cannot put the genie back in a bottle.
My time frame is, I've mentioned it many times. Is there a basis to assess a time frame in terms of how long the ETs will continue in this mode? And I think it's our development of starships. In other words, we're going to figure out how to go star to star here pretty soon. And we're going to have to get this done. We're going to have to get through this before that, because they're not going to put up with it. There's no way they're going to put up with us having starships and still threatening ourselves with nuclear weapons on a daily basis. So that, to me, is the time delimiter right there for them. Mm-hmm. Now, the time delimiter for us is nuclear war. In other words, we need to get this done, because our ability to avoid that nuclear war is eroding every day. And if we have it, then everything becomes pretty much moot.
I mean, it will be a long time before we're going to have building starships, and they could probably take a break, come back in a couple hundred years, whatever. So there's two delimiters here that I refer to a lot. And obviously, both of them, well, I mean, one of them leans towards disclosure as soon as possible. The other, there's still some time. We're not there yet. I doubt there's a secret program in our government where they're actually building starships in some underground facility and they're going to reveal them anytime soon. I don't think so. But you can't rule it out. And if they are, I assure you the ETs know it. So again, a very simple way to look at what's going down is this. No extraterrestrial civilization that has achieved that level of technology and knowledge is going to allow a civilization as violent as we are to learn the basis of star-to-star travel, build ships that can go from one star to another, and load them up with nuclear weapons just to be safe. They're not going to allow it. And I think that's where that's been the time delimiter on this for them all along. And I'm not reaching that far. I mean, it's almost common sense, right? It's literally common sense. You don't have to get carried away. And so I've been putting that out there consistently, and we'll see. But both of these situations seem to point towards disclosure pretty soon, either by us or by them. But of course, we can do it right away. And I think they'd be fine with that. All right. Because I don't think they want to see us have a nuclear war. And I don't think they would stop it. That doesn't mean they couldn't. They could. But I don't think they will. I certainly wouldn't want to place that bet. Would be an incredibly stupid bet to place. If we do have a nuclear war, I hope they do.
Have you heard the story that they said there's two factions, one 24,000 years in the future and the other 52,000 years in the future? They came back to try to – one's trying to cause something to happen and the other one's trying to stop something from happening. Those are the grays, and they claim to be us 24,000 and 54,000 years into the future, and that they became that because of a nuclear war. And I don't know how they evolved into what they are, but that's one of the stories. There's a bunch of stories.
I'm aware of that story, but let me go on the record here. I'm a time travel atheist.
Okay. All right, so you're not sure whether it's real or not.
Not sure. I mean, I'm about as well. You can't be absolutely sure about anything, but in terms of time travel, I give it a one tenth of a chance of being a factor in our world. Okay. It's science fiction. It's fun. It's clever.
Well, we're going to hold right there because I got to go into break now and come back.
Okay.
You're listening to The Other Side of Midnight. My guest is Stephen Bassett, our Capitol Hill UFO lobbyist for the longest time. And he sees a light at the end of the tunnel. I think I see a light at the end of the tunnel, too. So we'll be back shortly, right after the break.
TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com. Talk radio with pictures on demand. Liberate your hyperdimensional time scale and non-linearly access over 400 hours of conversation at the cutting edge of science and thought. Join Club 19.5 to get access to exclusive content that fits your interests and time schedule. Filter episodes by guest or subject. Membership costs $9.95 a month, 33 cents a day. Talk radio with pictures on demand. TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com.
TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com. Tune in to listen to Richard C. Hoagland and his fascinating guests. join Club 19.5 to get access to exclusive member benefits. As a Club 19.5 member, you'll gain access to the rest of this show and all previous 350 episodes. Membership costs $9.95 a month, 33 cents a day. Support the broadcast that provides you with the most interesting conversation available. Talk radio at the cutting edge of science and thought. TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com.
Welcome back to The Other Side of Midnight. I'm your host, Keith Morgan, sitting in for Richard, who has no power. And we're having a great conversation with Stephen Bassett. I've come across a lot of stuff, and maybe if I can get Richard to let me have a time where I can put all the things that I've experienced together and share them with you guys, maybe I can do that, because there's a lot of history here that I've experienced, seen, and I think you guys would love to hear it. So we're going to get back to Steve. Steve. Okay. So right now we're looking at a possible disclosure, but we're unsure how these guys are going to really bring this forward without really stubbing their toe, because they're carrying a lot of weight. And they've been deliberately keeping things secret, which with the Manhattan Project, yeah, I could see that. You got something that destructive. You didn't want to get into the hands of the wrong people, but eventually it did. But travel, space travel, something that can take you to the stars, I don't know. I think that should be something where should bring this planet together, because we should know that we're not alone out here. There are other entities, and any advanced civilization that far advanced probably has the ability to telepathically communicate. We just have not reached that point yet. I'm looking forward to seeing the future. I'm looking forward to watching the walls come down around all of this stuff. And guys like you, you've been fighting the good fight the whole time. And I applaud you guys. And I've been watching this young guy, Pravin Mohan, and he does his stuff from India on the temples and everything. And I'm looking at what he's presenting, and I'm going, how can anybody look at this stuff and go, this was not created by an advanced civilization? And one of the things that he showed was this temple, and he said a farmer was plowing his field, and in his field, he always got abundant crops. It would grow really good. And he runs into something with his plow, and he can't get past it, so he starts digging it up. And then he got to a point where then he called the archaeologists in, and they unearthed, and it was this temple. And he's now standing like about one story up on the temple, and he's telling the story, and he says, what did this farmer run into? And he says, he didn't run into anything down here. He ran into that. He points up to the top of the temple, the point of the temple. And that's like four stories up. And I'm going, how did he get buried? And the explanation usually comes, oh, these people buried their temples. No, they didn't bury it. The flood did that. It was a huge tsunami that encompassed this entire planet and buried a lot of stuff, including that temple, Göbekli Tepe. Puma Punka isn't really buried. It's just in pieces. And people don't know that hey, there was an advanced, there were several advanced civilizations here on this planet. They were probably both civilizations that had technologies that we can't duplicate to this day. And that should be our clue right there, that we need to look, wake up, pay attention, and look at what's there in front of us. And I get vilified by Richard and Ron every time I bring up the Anunnaki. But those tablets are 6 to 7,000 years old. They're written in stone. There's no King James version. There's no King Solomon's version. They're written in stone. They haven't been photoshopped. And they're telling us the history of this planet, but they don't want to accept it. But it makes sense of all the things that were going on. And if you're looking at stuff standing outside the mainstream of what we think our ancestors could do, maybe it wasn't our ancestors. It had to be a more advanced civilization living on this planet. Now, they probably are still here. We may not even notice them. Or they may have got up and left. But I think a lot of the civilizations that have come and gone were probably part of their legacy. And those temples in India are so beautiful and so detailed and so well put together. And if it wasn't for Mohan, we wouldn't get to see those things, because I would never get to travel to India. But he's been putting out so much good stuff. It's no wonder that Ancient Aliens made him part of their whole thing, because he's showing us stuff that there's no way primitive humans could have done stuff like that. And unless we back up and start looking at this stuff from a standpoint of who built it, where did it come from, and what's our role in the whole thing, and stop trying to be so arrogant saying we did this, we built the pyramids, we built this, we did that. No. This was way beyond what our primitive ancestors could have done, and we don't want to accept it. But I see us coming to the head now, and I'm hoping these guys rear their heads at some point to really get everybody on the same track. If everybody starts realizing, hey, there's a lot more to the science and everything, we can move together, move forward together as one world, not all the different gyrations of the world. And those tablets even tell us why we all speak in different languages. The Tower of Babel, it wasn't because we were trying to build a tower to heaven. Marduk, Enki's son, was creating a celestial launch site, which is where they would launch their celestial chariots or spaceships from. And he was going to put humans in charge of it. And his uncle Enlil said, if we give them this, it will be nothing they will not ask for. And he sent his people to destroy it. And then Enlil had Enki come up with all the languages that they imposed in all the different groups when they spread the humans all around the world. And that's why we all were speaking different languages. And we need to come back together as one entity, well, one human species on this planet, and not stop looking at the differences. Anyway, let me get off my soapbox. So, Steve, what's next on your agenda?
I'm going back to D.C. on April 2. The House of Senate will be in session starting on the 8th all the way to the 20th, about 12 solid days. I'm going to do my best to try to get one of those offices talking with one of the members.
Tim Burchett has indicated he'd like to have lunch, and Jamie Raskin indicated he would like to get in touch. And so I've been checking with those offices. They are busy right now. I mean, you know what's going on. So it's not easy, particularly for basically a light cruiser activist. But I think there's a chance I can get some FaceTime, and that could open some doors. So I'm going to be working on that between the 2nd and the 20th. Of course, the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure Conference is coming up. It's going to, you know, I mean, we've got a shot at somewhere between 2 and 3,000 attendees. We have 65 speakers. I am going to be involved in quite a bit of it, including panels and lectures, workshops, and I've been kind of helping the conference because I put on quite a few conferences myself. And I'm proud of this conference coming back after the pandemic. They had a tough year last year, but still it was quite a 3 days, 4 days. Of course, on the last day, the 5th of June, is when Grush gave his interview to Coulthard, and we're all watching it together, you know, a couple hundred of us at the conference. So Lord knows what will happen this year, come May 30, June 3, contactinthedesert.com. We'd like to see a crowd so we can have a real high energy celebration. And I should mention that this year, for the first time, they're going to be doing day passes at the Contact of the Desert. So people can come for a single day if that's all that's available. They don't have to buy the entire event, all 3 or 4 days. I think that's good. And we hope a lot of people will come over from Los Angeles and Orange County to spend at least a day. So that's going to be helpful. So it's going to be a significant event. The Hollywood Disclosure Alliance, which Dan Harari and I founded back in November, is making great progress, up to about 122 members. There will be a panel, a Hollywood Disclosure Alliance panel there. We have a couple of celebrities going to be joining us, maybe a few more, who are into this issue. God bless them. And it's actually going to be 14 panels. And this year, the banquet is going to be in the Crystal Ballroom, which can hold up to, I think, 800 people. So hopefully that's going to be a pretty spectacular event. So it's going to be quite an event. So that's coming up. There's other conferences coming up this year, the MUFON Symposium in September, the Roswell Festival in July, and there are a few others. I'm just about to load them up on my website, paradigmresearchgroup.org. And if you go to paradigmresearchgroup.org, the top page, I've made very clear at the top some links where you can go read in a readable form, not a legislative format, but it's basically a PDF Word doc. Read the initial legislation that was signed in 2020, the second bill that was signed in 2021, and the third bill that was signed in 2022. You can also read the bill that was just signed in December toward 2024, NDAA, and you can read the language of the UAP Control Act that was submitted by the Senate that was eventually changed. That's up there as well. And there is a link to the Arrow report, a 63-page report where the Department of Defense tried to convince people that didn't know better that there's really nothing to this. It's one of the most egregious things they've ever done. In a way, and nobody's dying yet, but it's just an embarrassment. And you can read that and make of it what you will. And I'm going to try to beef up the site a little bit. There's so much. I have no staff, and funds are limited, so I just can't maintain that site at a level I'd like to. But that may change because I have already registered Paradigm Research Group with the District of Columbia as a new corporation. It'll be nonprofit, and we will then file for a 501c3 IRS nonprofit status. So for the first time, people can donate to Paradigm Research Group and receive a tax donation or tax deduction rather. So I'm going to be raising money to do some things I haven't done before. I have some projects that I'm looking forward to doing. So that's ahead.
That's good.
And there's multiple projects going on in LA related to this issue. Mm-hmm. Most people have no idea how much content is in the pipeline, because the people that make film and make content in this city, this county, are starting to wake up to the fact that it's real. And Hollywood Disclosure Alliance is trying to help there. So you can expect a great deal of content, and it's only just the beginning. It's going to be huge amounts, and that's good. And the New Paradigm Institute is on its way to becoming the post-disclosure think tank. It's already has substantial website staff of 12, two offices, including one in D.C. next to the Capitol building. And newparadigminstitute.org has raised some money, but it needs to raise millions more. And so hopefully it's going to find that major, major donor, the kind that helped launch the Center for American Progress back in 2002 with about $20 million. An important think tank, to be sure.
I miss your X conferences. Those were nice.
Let me say that if I'm able to raise enough money as a nonprofit,
mm-hmm.
I plan to hold another X conference. But I have to raise enough seed money so that it can be done right. I'm not going to bootstrap any more of those. And if I get that, I do plan another X conference. It could be pretty cool. I would probably call it X conference, the reunion. So we'll see. There's, you know, with the resources we have, this field is filled with people with skills and talents who worked with almost no money for decades. With resources, we can make sure that there'll be no retrograde. We can close this door once and for all. But most importantly, remember, disclosure is simply the beginning. It's the end of the truth embargo, but it's the beginning of the post-disclosure world. That's going to go on for the rest of eternity.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a big deal. So the work really begins after disclosure. The only irritation that I have is that we've had to wait so long to start the work. We should have been at this years ago, but again, the arc of the universe, all the arcs of the universe are long, but bend toward something nice. But I think that's a truism. There's no law that says you can't bend those arcs a little more, make them sooner, bring them down faster. The nature of activism, it tries to take that long arc and bend it toward justice a little quicker, toward truth a little sooner. And we have so many people now that can participate in activism by the millions, thanks to the internet and the social media, which is not all bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's reason for optimism. But ultimately, without the truth embargo coming through now, without disclosure, I don't see a way out of the situation that we've created. I just don't see a way out. It's like one of those what do you call them? Escape rooms, in which there is no escape. It's like once you get in, you can never get out. We're just about there. We're creating no way out, and that's now. And what you never leave, right? And just they find you later, decomposed.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride. I've watched all of these things take place. I've watched all the people. The naysayers and the ones who were stuck in the middle didn't know which way this was going, but coming to a head. And
I think so.
And it's coming fast. I see it's coming fast. It's just that these guys, old school guys, are still trying to keep the lid on when they know they got to get up off of it eventually.
Well, as I say, they've lost. They just don't know it yet.
Yeah, I think it's time has come, and it was time for us to move forward. We can't keep marking time. I told my flat earth nephew, I said, you know, everything changes. That's the one absolute in this world you can't dispute. Oh no, left and right, they don't change. Up and down don't change. And I said, yeah, you get out on a ship, left and right becomes port and starboard. You go in space, there is no up or down. Yeah, it changes. Depends on where you're at. But he doesn't see it that way. So everything changes, and it's time for this change to come into place, just like Berlin Wall. They didn't believe it was coming down, and it did. Now it's time for this to fall.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's very much like that. There were many that thought it could never, ever come down. But that's not the way the world works. These kind of artificial structures, these illusions of power, they don't last. We try to rebuild them, try to go back there. Sometimes we succeed. But the truth embargo is so past its shelf life. It's really remarkable. It's like a dam that is like 100 years past its shelf life, meaning it was not supposed to last this long, right? It needs to be rebuilt or something. And people are just sitting there, it's okay, no problem. It'll hold on forever. It's really kind of pathetic in a way, but it's not unusual.
And the only reason it's been there is holding on is because of the belief factor. Instead of people looking at the facts, they put the belief before the facts and ignore the obvious. And that's been going on for the longest time. And until you put the hard facts in front of them, and they can't dispute it. It's like my flat earth nephew trying to explain the 6 days of 6 months of daylight and 6 months of darkness with a flat earth scenario. He can't do it because it just doesn't work. So the same thing here. We live in a belief-oriented world, and now that belief-oriented world has to make a large leap of faith and understanding of what their real place is in this universe. And until they do that, they're going to be going around in a circle. But I think the next generation coming up, they've been exposed to all of this technology, and it's ET Gleam technology. People don't want to believe that, but yeah, Bell Labs came up with the transistor from technology they got off the crash at Roswell. And from there, it exploded. And the next generation coming in learned the technology and the next passed on to the next. And it's coming to a conclusion that's going to lead to the evidence that we're not alone in the universe. And if these guys keep making themselves known by putting on aerobatic exercises in front of crowds and things like that, and what are the other things they're doing? They're leaving crop circles and people going, oh, these are hoaxes. No, they're not hoaxes. And that was proven by Levengood, because you don't get the little nodules on the plants explode and they bend over and then they actually grow back up when the crop circle has been there for a while. And then they leave a shadow of the crop circle in the next crop growing from the previous one. I mean, that right there tells you it wasn't a bunch of people stomping down the plants with boards. Just doesn't work that way. But it's disclosure that's been coming, and it's been growing, and people start to question, and that's what they're supposed to do, is question this stuff, not just accept, oh yeah, that's a hoax, this is a hoax, because it's going to come back and bite them in the butt. You know about the ship, the cargo ship that ran into the bridge in Baltimore.
Yeah, based in Washington. I know it well.
Yeah, and when I'm looking at this and I'm going, I know this ship is so humongous. They couldn't have control of it unless they had power. When that power went away, they didn't have control.
Yeah, the power went out of the boat. It's pretty obvious from the film.
Yeah. And Some are saying it was probably hacked or something like that because of the technology that was on it or whatever, and it shut it down, and it could be sabotage. And all of these people are thinking this may not be an accident. Don't know.
Well, it may just be that they lost power. That simple.
It may be it's that simple.
Mm-hmm. It's Occam's razor. Always start there. It's not as much fun, but it'll save you a lot of wasted time and effort. Again,
no one bothered to put up more protection for those staunchions. And there is a way to do it. They could have been protected in a way that the ship would not have made it to the actual staunchion. It would have grounded first. Just didn't do it.
Yeah.
It's the perfect example of where the United States is. We don't fix things anymore. Baby boomers were given a post-World War II Mercedes-Benz, and we've been driving it for 77 years, and we haven't fixed anything. The engine, the mufflers, the tires, the gears, right? The catalytic converter. We're just driving it
up.
Thinking
yes,
it lasts
kept.
Forever.
Yeah.
Eventually, it'll just come to a stop in the middle of the road, and the semi-tractor trailer will just run right over it. We won't fix anything. I mean, we've tried to do some things. We've had a few programs. I'm not saying we don't do some things. Obviously, there's every president tries to come in, tries to get some program going, and a few things get done. But it's far too little. You know, it's like far too little. You have to repair the whole dam. You can't just repair parts of the dam. You have
That's
to
true.
Repair the whole thing because it can break anywhere. And so we repair this, we fix a little here, but we don't fix enough. And so it's almost pointless. Eventually the dam breaks and everybody drowns. We need to fix things in this country. We are very much out of the fixing business, except at great, great effort. Meaning you have to go unbelievably far to try to get something done. And it's never it's too little too late. And that bridge symbolizes that about as well as anything could. When that bridge was built, they didn't have 120-foot massive container ships weighing that much. And then the ships just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and people go, well, yeah, what are you going to do? Yeah. It's really sad. Now that bridge is going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars to replace, millions of dollars to clear that channel. Money just thrown down the grade. They could have protected those staunches with, you know, a few millions of dollars.
Yeah.
No, we don't fix things in America anymore. We just rely on, I don't know, our gut instincts and our illusions.
And then we throw money at it and say, oh, this will take care of the problem. No. When I used to stand in the control rooms at ABC and watch spots come through, Stan Myers in his water-powered dune buggy and Troy Reed in the Reed magnetic motor. And I'm watching these things, and these guys with technologies that could have got us off of oil. And now Toyota says, oh, yeah, we have an engine that will run on water. It's going to put the electric cars out of business. And I'm going, come on, that's too little too late, okay? You had your chance, but you chose to stick with gas and oil. And now the electric car is going to blow you out the water. And we're coming up on break time. This is our last break. You're listening to The Other Side of Midnight. My guest, Steve Bassett. Keith Morgan sitting in for Richard Hoagland. And I hope you guys have been enjoying this. And we'll be back in just a moment. It's going to be a short break, so there's only like a minute there. All right.
TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com. Talk radio. With pictures on demand. Liberate your hyperdimensional time scale and non-linearly access over 400 hours of conversation at the cutting edge of science and thought. Join Club 19.5 to get access to exclusive content that fits your interests and time schedule. Filter episodes by guest or subject. Membership costs $9.95 a month, 33 cents a day. Listen while you travel or as an environment for your endeavors. $0.08 an episode, 2.5 cents per hour of content. The Other Side of Midnight.com.
Back to the Other Side of Midnight. We've been having a great conversation with Stephen Bassett, and I think we both see that there's hope for this planet one way or the other, as long as these guys stop the lying and just tell us what's going on. I think the American people can handle that. Probably all the people of the planet can probably handle that at this point in time. But it's the upcoming generation. I think they're going to be the ones that are going to make the difference. They're going to be the ones that are going to really, really take advantage of the knowledge that we're not alone in the universe and start to clean up the planet, develop things that will help. So let me get back to Steve. Okay, where do we leave off?
Look, we, how can I put this? We have an existential crisis in Ukraine. We have an existential crisis in the Middle East. We have an existential political crisis in the United States. We have a very, very, very dangerous crisis in the Straits, China Straits. These are the four probably top things that's bearing down on us. But there are other tremendous amounts of unrest around the world because there's a number of genocides going on that just can't even make it in the news, because all these other existential crises are dominating the news, but people are being slaughtered, maybe genocided in a number of parts of the world. All of this is leading to unrest, dissatisfaction, the huge upheavals in particularly Central and soon very possibly Mexico, Central America, and to some degree South America is going to lead to an existential crisis at the border of the United States. So we're deep in the doo-doo here. And so we have got to get our act together. And to me, the number one thing that will help that happen is a resurgence of confidence in government that it's telling the truth. So we can start arranging things, making decisions based upon truth as opposed to fantasies, paranoia, what have you. Ending the truth embargo will take us in that direction pretty quickly. The political parties and the various heads of state are basically whistling in the dark. They're dabbling. They don't know what to do. They're overwhelmed. There's 8 billion people here, 200 countries, and we have one UN and it doesn't work very well. So this is not going to work out. Right? This is not going to end well. I've been feeling that way since practically I was 10 years old. It's going to end really, really badly. And that's in the context of two previous world wars that actually, you know, we got through them, we got over them, had some economic booms. It was all good, right? This is going to end that well.
Yeah.
This is going to end really, really badly. And so I just hope people hear. The paradigm shifts are not democratic. You don't shift one paradigm to another when 51% of the people want to do it. Paradigm shifts happen because they have to happen because they're incredibly powerful. And so it's not necessary that 51% of the American people understand this. It's not necessarily even 70% understand it. 20% fully understand this and get behind it. We'll smash through this truth embargo easily. It's not a science is not democratic. You don't take a vote to see what the theory of gravity is going to be. You get the truth. You get it. A limited number of people find that truth. They organize it. They put it out. It becomes established, and they move on to other truths. And so we've got to understand that there is a group that's going to have to make this call. There's a group that's going to have to lead this charge. That's the way it's always been. And right now we have that group. We have the resources pretty much. We have the people. We have the social media. We have a lot of journalists on our side. The politicians are stepping forward. We have enough to end this thing. We don't need to wait for the rest of the country or the world to catch up. They will catch up. They will figure it out in their own good time. I'm not in the convincing business, really. I'm in the organizing business, the informing business, but also the activist business. And that's less about convincing than it is motivating and getting things done. And that's what all activists do. And I understand that people want to convince. They want to debate, you know, the truth versus the facts and everything else. But ultimately, that's not what gets us the prize. Usually, when you have a paradigm shift like this, most people may not understand it, but they kind of know it's real, whether they can have an opinion or not. They feel it. They sense it. And I think the population understands something big is coming. But you know, they have lives to lead. They have enormous pressures on them, and that's in the wealthy countries. And so those that understand, those that know how to move things forward have got to take the lead and get it done.
I agree. I still think when Congress is having these hearings on stuff like this, they should have somebody there just technologically savvy enough to be able to confirm or dispute what they're being told by these guys like the guy from the Navy and so forth. Because the people who get voted in, they don't have the kind of knowledge to be able to understand what they're being told, let alone what they're looking at. And without that technical advisor there to say, hey, you know, this video is not showing what he is saying, then they're not going to get the truth. One of the congressmen asked a question about, were there any other UFO investigations before Project Blue Book? And the other guy from the Department of the Navy or whatever, he said, well, not as far as he knew of, but there was Project Grudge and Project Sign that came before Project Blue Book. And they were, of course, all the military stuff and doing their investigation. But they were more clandestine than they were, and Blue Book was more public. So not too many people know about it, but if I know about them, shouldn't the guy coming in there to speak to these guys about this stuff know this?
No, you don't obsess over that. That briefing was irrelevant, inconsequential, trivial, not important. Just let it go.
Okay.
Let it go. Focus on the heavy stuff, the Grush hearing, right? That's where you focus. That's where the action is. That was early preliminary. Don't worry about it. And they haven't done much of that since. They've been getting more sophisticated. And as far as the members of Congress, they've been getting briefings now going all the way back to nearly 5 years, but private from witnesses. They've had time to educate themselves, and I'm sure they have. So that's the process. That's why those briefings were happening. I say briefings, I mean private meetings with witnesses going back years. And that's educating them so that they can hold these hearings and be able to ask the right questions. And because it's nonpartisan, they seem to be behaving themselves well. And they have resources. They have people they can call on to help them understand. Though I don't know what you need to understand about the fact that a craft or a, you know, unidentified object hangs over a ICBM facility and turns the missiles off. I don't think you have to be a genius to get that.
Right.
So again, don't sell them too short. When we have the hearing, the questions will be solid. And I'm talking about the intel here. The questions will be solid. The answers will be extraordinary. And it should be enough to end the truth embargo, meaning give the president the basis to come forward without being disruptive or too political. That's what we need to happen, and it's in the hands of Mark Schirmer. It's that simple. Not Mark Schirmer, Mark Warner. It's just that simple.
Mm-hmm. Well, when it came down to the hearing with Gresh and the pilot's name who chased the Tic Tac,
Graver.
Yeah, Graver. Their testimonies, I think it convinced a lot of the people that were there in Congress that yes, this is a real deal. And it's not just something you can just shrug off and go, hey, this is just their imagination. There was a lot of things left out about the radar contacts and stuff dropping from 80,000 feet down to 15 feet above the ocean and stopping on a dime in a second or 2 seconds. I mean, that kind of stuff, theoretically, it can't be done according to our current laws of physics or the laws that were put together by man to explain physics. But obviously, there's more for us to learn, and we're not learning it because, one, there's nobody there to show it to us, and the stuff that we have gleaned from it, it's being used for military purposes, and they're not letting the American people know that it is existing. So I think we have a base on the moon. I think we have a base on Mars and the TR-3Bs to go between them. And they just don't want anybody else having a piece of the pie.
Well, if we get disclosure, we'll find out about the truth of that pretty quickly, I think. Because it'll be pretty exciting to reveal. I mean, at that point, they're going to be competing. Government entities are going to be competing with each other to say who can tell the truth the fastest in order to get the public's appreciation. I look forward to that. Some things will prove out, some won't.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, we've got about 15 minutes here before we go to closing. I don't know. Did I tell you I met my mom's old boss, George Bush, when he was vice president under Reagan? He was on Nightline.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I recall.
Yeah.
By the way, let me ask you something. How's Ted doing? Obviously, he's up there now. He's got to be in his mid-80s. But is he able to watch things? Is he able to keep up with things that are going on?
Yeah, I'm sort of in contact with him, but I'm trying not to bother him because he didn't really think, you know, Hoagland had real science going on. And I communicate with him every once in a blue moon because I don't want to disturb him. But yeah, he's still hanging in there and he's doing okay. As far as I know at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, give him my regards. And again, I'd be interested to know what he thinks about the Gresh hearing and what's going on. I mean, he's a legend. And if he wanted to be briefed about this, I'd be happy to help there. Who knows? He might get enough information and step out on the issue. Kind of do a Walter Cronkite.
Okay. It's about time for me to drop him an email, see how he's doing, just to check on him. I got a couple of friends that are going through all kinds of things right now with chronic renal failure and so on. And I'm trying to keep track of them, let alone all the other people that I know. But,
so true. I know what you mean.
I'll see what I can do. All right.
Yeah. I mean, he's it's a major thing that's happening here, and I know that if he understood it well enough, he'd be thrilled about this. And I'm talking about the overall fundamental issue. I'm not talking about any specifics, but the fundamental confirmation of the ET presence, which essentially Grush confirmed and Bigelow confirmed and Gary Nolan confirmed and the defense contractors confirmed and Chuck Schumer confirmed. It's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I think it'd be cool if Ted, you know, said something, maybe had a sense of it, whatever. If he needs a little help and understanding, I'm happy to step in there. I remember way back after the press conference in 2001, May 9th, it went pretty well, big turnout, a lot of press. And we were over at the hotel, or right after it was over, you took one of the videos and took it straight to Koppel.
Mm-hmm.
And he put it in his machine to look at it. Somebody tagged along with you. I learned later that somebody was a disinfo person, I think. He was deliberately tagging along in order to cause a problem. In any event, and so we got the word back, maybe from you, a little later that night. Party was going on at the hotel that the ABC wanted five witnesses to interview, five of the five. And I think Greer threw up five, and I think he added Edgar Mitchell to the list, and we handed it to you or somebody to take it back to ABC. And so I remember that very well. I remember how you were running, running the issue to up to Ted as much as you could. And it was interesting times. Of course, the 911 events pretty much ended that thread. I mean, it ended right there after that attack. There was just no traction at all for this. It was unfortunate, but that's life. That's history. But I remember it well.
You weren't talking about Billy Cox, a writer for Florida Today, are you? Because after the hearing the press conference meeting, mm-hmm. Billy Cox, Florida writer for Florida Today, came back to ABC with me, and I introduced him to Ted, and we talked a little bit.
That's not who I'm talking about. It was somebody else. Not Billy. Billy's cool.
Okay.
That's cool that you brought him to see Ted. That's great.
And Billy,
I didn't know that.
Billy told me this story about David Dickerson, Congressman Bill Nelson's press secretary, and he was fishing with Dickerson, and Billy's trying to get Dickerson to talk to Nelson about going on the record and about looking into this stuff. And Dickerson says, Nelson's trying to run for governor of Florida and he can't be associated with crackpot metaphysics. And then Billy catches this fish, and as he's reeling the fish in, Dickerson takes his motorized camera and starts taking these rapid snapshots of him catching the fish. And then when Dickerson gets back and he gets his film developed, whatever, he says, you're never going to believe what's on this film. That's what he tells Billy. And he sent Billy copies of the photos, and Billy sent them to me. And I tried to get somebody to look at these. But what you see is, in the first shot, Billy's got reaching for the line as he starts to pull the fish in. And there's this object above, off to the side, typical saucer shape with the dome. Then as he pulls the fish up, this thing is now right over top of Billy's head, and it's clearly a typical saucer with the dome. And I'm like, crackpot metaphysics. And he took the pictures.
Can you send me a copy of those two? I'd love to see them.
Yeah,
Billy may have sent them to me years ago, but they're lost in the files. But I'd love to see those two.
Yeah, I scanned them and I've got them on my hard drive. I can send you copies of those.
But Billy's still writing about this. He's still writing a blog on it after all these years. He's one of the longest people writing on this issue in the country.
Yeah, yeah.
His blog is called Life in Jonestown, and it's a, I think, a subscription on on what is it? I can't remember the platform, but it's a subscription the platform. It's not much, but it's worth it. I mean, he's great. You can go read his all his stuff going back years and years.
But do you find it kind of funny that Nelson is now head of NASA?
No, it's exactly who I would have appointed to be head of NASA if disclosure was coming.
Okay.
The perfect choice.
Yeah. Well,
that doesn't mean he's going to come give public, you know, go in front of the reporters and talk about UFOs. It just means that he's the right guy to be in charge. If we get disclosure up until then, he's got to stay between the lines like everybody else.
Right. It's just like the Washington Post article said that the unions were upset because key positions were being given to retired military personnel at NASA in 1965. That's how they took over NASA. They put their retired military personnel in place because the charter says that no military personnel can run NASA. So you get your retired people who are technically civilians, you put them in place, and if they're told to put their thumb on something, they do it, and they with a yes, sir, and a salute, and nobody's the wiser. So that's why NASA's been hiding a lot of they've been hiding a lot of stuff. And
they were going to hide it regardless. I mean, they had no choice. NASA could not reveal anything about ETs, no matter who was running it.
Right.
But, you know, I'm sure they influenced it. They also had to use NASA for some of their secret work. But NASA's been a victim of this truth embargo without question. It could have done so much more. It could have been the cutting edge of the post-disclosure world. I mean, eventually, I suppose it will be, though it's going to have some explaining to do, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't its fault. It had no choice. The DOD was never going to let NASA take the lead on the ET issue. And I happen to believe that quite a few people that have worked in NASA over these years, going all the way back to the beginning, knew that there was an ET presence. And undoubtedly was hoping that that would end, that we'd get the truth out, because then NASA would ascend to glory. But that didn't happen. So talk about frustrating. Okay. So again, after the truth, if we get disclosure, you're going to have stories like this pouring out of people. Even now, I'm running into people that are telling me about this relative and that person and this person about they were told this and they were told that. People are starting to speak privately, and then they're private, or privately at least, to relatives, and then the relatives are passing it on. I mean, there's thousands of stories out there like this. America has been loyal to its government by and large. We haven't committed revolution. We honor the agreements. We honor the NDAs. We don't, you know, it takes a lot to get us in the streets, really pissed off, usually war. But overall, on our national security, particularly nuclear threat and all that, and the ET issue, we've been pretty reasonable. We just, you know, going along. So there's thousands of stories out there that people just weren't going to tell, but now they're starting to tell them. Not to mention, and we can end with this because I've got to shut down here. I've got some people here, then they need to go to bed. It's late. What was I going to say? Almost had. I just lost it. I'm pretty tired. When the truth embargo ends, there's going to be a flood of these stories, and they're going to come out, and we're going to learn a great deal just from that, from people coming forward. They're going to be able to finally speak. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be absolutely amazing. And of course, the longer we wait, the more of them are dying off, but there's still plenty of people that have been involved in this that would love to talk about it. And the truth embargo and will allow that. And so again, it's going to be an extraordinary time, and I can't wait. It can't happen too soon. All right, Keith, I'm going to let you wrap up, and I'm going to close down here and give my regards to Richard. Hopefully gets his power back.
Okay, Steve. Thank you for being a guest on the other side of midnight. And I think we had a great conversation. And I was doing a lot of talking too, but
sorry, it's all right.
But that the on on the website under Radio with Pictures, I have the stills that I took from the video that they were showing at the May 17th, 2022 conference, where the guy from the Navy was lying through his teeth. And you can see that this object is getting bigger as it's going across the screen and passing something. It's supposed to be getting smaller. And the clouds are coming at the plane, and clouds can't pass a plane if it's going backwards. You just can't do that if it's flying. Even if it's a prop plane, clouds don't pass the plane. The plane passes the crop, clouds. So it's been a pleasure talking with you. And I'm going to see if I can touch base with Koppel and point him in your direction, okay? So you have a good night, Steve. He's gone. All righty. We've got about 3 minutes left. I hope you guys, maybe you put in the comments to Richard that I need to talk about the technologies and things that I've experienced and the ET contact that I've experienced as a show. And I can tell you all the things that I know that have been kept from the public. Cars that ran on water, magnetic repulsion motors that work to turn generators, and things like that that the public never got to see. It went local, but it never went national.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's high time that the things that are coming out that they're claiming to now be releasing, they could have come out 20 years ago. Or more, but they just didn't want to deal with them because of oil was the commander of everything, and it was the new black gold, and they didn't want anything upsetting the apple cart. Okay, well, on behalf of Richard C. Hoagland and Cynthia and myself, I'd like to say it's been a pleasure hosting the show. And this part two, I'm glad that we at least got to have Steve on and hear what's happening. And I hope you guys tune in next week. I don't know what the show is going to be on. I'm pretty sure Richard's got something in mind. And I think he'd like to have you guys come and listen. And it looked like we had a pretty big audience tonight, I guess because Steve was on. But I like talking to you guys, and I hope you guys like listening. And with that said, this is The Other Side of Midnight, hosted by your host, Morgan. You have a good night.